WrestleRumble.com is running a championship belt raffle. Don't let Vince McMahon know they're calling it a belt raffle. Right now, you can enter on WrestleRumble.com to win not one, but two championship belts. The classic Winged Eagle, plus any title of your choice, off WWEShop.com, priced $429.99 or less. The live drawing is March 31st at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can enter the raffle all the way through 4:45 that day. It is only $10 to enter, and you could walk away with two title belts that combined would run you close to $1,000. And all it costs is one $10 entry. I have a Winged Eagle. It's my favorite of all the title belt designs. And if I had to pick a second belt, I think I'd go with that WWE United Kingdom title. I think that is probably the most beautiful of all of the current designs in WWE. But that's me. You make the choice. Go to WrestleRumble.com right now to enter.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered the street!
You like fighting a woman?
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Come over here and fight me!
Delete! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 591 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 24th, 2019. I am the Solid Monster. Just got wrapped up watching the finals of the New Japan Cup earlier this morning, which I'm going to be getting into here in just a few minutes. So if you have not yet had a chance to watch the finals, if you do not know the outcome of the finals and don't want to know, I'll mention when I get to that part, you'll want to skip ahead because I will be getting into some spoilers that have a direct impact on the main event, or one of the main events, at the Madison Square Garden show coming up on April 6th. So we'll get into that and all the stuff from Raw and SmackDown this week. But first, I want to thank everybody who has been using our Audible link. Keep supporting. Audible's been a great sponsor and partner of this show now for a very long time. And I mentioned a few different books last week and some different parts of the show. Chris Jericho's book I mentioned when I told that Kofi Kingston story. Daniel Bryan's book I mentioned, you know, when I was doing the WrestleMania countdown, talking about the match with him and Sheamus. You can get those books and more. Use our link, get it for free. audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You use that link, sign up for a 30-day trial. And you know the drill, you cancel that trial before 30 days for any reason. Whatever book you cash in on, because you get one free book, you get to keep the book, no matter what, whether you stick with it or not. audibletrial.com/Solomonster is the link to use. The link on Lyft, always the same. You want to set up a new account, get a few bucks off your first ride with Lyft, do so using the promo code Solomonster. And thank you to everybody who's made a PayPal donation this past week. You can do so on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout out. I want to say thank you to Brian the Cleaver Carpenter. I saw Brian was representing the Sound Off at Comic-Con this weekend, and he was wearing his Sunday night Sound Off shirt for photo ops with Edge and Christian and Goldust, and so that's awesome. And anytime you guys wear a Sound Off shirt, or if you get your sign on TV, if it's not taken away, anything like that, cap it, send it to me, and I can give you a shout-out on the show. It's the least I can do. I love stuff like that, so thank you to Brian. The Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, thank you to him. John Loose Cannon Lopez. Deadpool James Herrera. The Florida Freebird Brian Becerra. Out of Control Cody Thomas. Luis Hercules Hernandez, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Malicious Intent, Michael Cuomo, haven't heard that name in a while, I hope he can make it out to the meetup, the Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T, Stephen Handyman Halostick, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, the Anarchist Andrew Heller, Too Bad Trey Marquis, the Reno Renegade Wayne Ashanti, Interfere and I'll Kill You, Ingo Wabu, the Orlando Commando, Christopher Thompson, Recon, Russell Bulware, Z-Sheriff 14, want to shout him out, as well as Sky. Happy birthday to Sky, longtime listener of the podcast. And Andrew Golden, Asa J, KJHM90, all you guys, thank you very much. Christopher Pimp Daddy Purington, his very dear, close, personal friend, Ryan Finkelstein has a brand new daily podcast called Locked On Mets, where he will be discussing all things New York Mets. God be with you. Every story, every stat, every inevitable controversy that erupts during the season. If you want great daily Mets analysis, if you're a baseball fan, Ryan will have you covered. The debut episode drops tomorrow, March 25th, on Spotify and wherever podcasts are available. Also, I want to say shout somebody else out here. Shout out to Dr. Hank Spaulding on the release of his new book, The Just and Loving Gaze of God with Us, Paul's Apocalyptic Political Theology. It is an examination of ancient Pauline writings using the work of the Irish philosopher Iris Murdoch. An Irish philosopher named Iris. Irish Iris. Say that five times fast. The book was originally born out of a dissertation in political philosophy. So congratulations to the good doctor on publishing the book. You can find the book on Amazon or directly through WIPF and Stock Publishers. So congrats to him. King Kong Bundy, as you know, passed away a few weeks ago, unexpectedly. Apparently he had been sick for a while. I don't know what the health issue was. But still, his death was a shock, I think, to most people. Turns out, though, he was a big cat person, which makes me like him even more. His cats were a very big part of his life, but he owned about 10 of them. And for whatever reason, either his family can't or won't take the cats in, so a cat rescue agency in New Jersey is in the process of trying to find homes for all of them. I have the names of five of the cats. Five. It's Bundy Five. Five of the cats here, they range in age from 5 to 15. Paige, Prada, Pat, Gio, and Stewie. I don't know about the other five. Some of them may have already been adopted. I'm pretty sure some of them have been. Gio, for example, I think was adopted on Friday. Bundy lived in Gloucester County, New Jersey. The Gloucester County Animal Shelter has their pictures, the pictures of the cats, up on its Facebook page. If you Google them, you can find the, or go on Facebook and just search for the Gloucester County Animal Shelter. One of the animals, Paige, is a tortoiseshell cat, which is a beautiful cat. They say that she's scared and lonely, doesn't know where she is. Pat is the oldest. Her and Gio are at the Perfect Angels Cat Rescue, also in Gloucester County. If you're interested and you think that you can take any of them in or know someone who can give them a good home, please do so. Anytime I hear about animals, you know, separated from their owners after they pass away, or you hear stories after a big hurricane or some kind of big storm or natural disaster, people get displaced. The animals do too. And they get displaced from their owners, and it's heartbreaking. So please go to perfectangels.org. That's P-U-R-R-F-E-C-T angels.org. Or Google the website for the Gloucester County Animal Shelter. That's G-L-O-U-C-E-S-T-E-R. I hope I'm pronouncing that the right way. And you can search for the profiles for each of the animals on there. Please adopt them before Frank Shamrock gets his hands on them. Did you hear about that story? Now, I'm not saying that Frank Shamrock goes around hurting animals, that he's a habitual animal abuser or anything like that, but he did a really dumb thing with his mother's dog, which he admitted to in an interview with a television affiliate in Dallas. Frank Shamrock, by the way, for those who don't know, I say his name like everybody knows who he is. Obviously a very famous martial artist, fighter, the half-brother of Ken Shamrock, who of course had not a long career, but I think a pretty successful run for himself in WWE, and you know, belongs in the Hall of Fame and isn't, and that's a whole other issue. So this is Frank. This is his brother, Frank. And he gave an interview to a television affiliate down in Dallas. Later on, he tried to backpedal and claim fake news, because that's what you do, right? When you hear something you don't like, you just start throwing out, oh, fake news, I didn't say that, I was taken out of context. I'm not under investigation, is what he said on his Instagram. Even though in the article, he said, they can charge me. I'll show up. Dallas police are looking to possibly charge him for animal cruelty for tying up one of his mother's dogs to a truck at the airport, leaving food and water for it, and then boarding a plane that he had to catch back home to California. So the dog was left there alone for 5 days, tied up, before it was found. In a separate interview with TMZ, he claimed he called airport security before he got on the plane. He called them to say, hey, there's a dog in the truck and I gotta go, but please go find the dog. Problem is, they tried and they couldn't find the dog. 5 days, the dog was in the car before it was finally found. You know, obviously it's their fault. It's not Shamrock's fault. It's airport security's fault. Clearly it's their fault. He says his mother just could not care for them anymore. He was able to place one of the dogs with a shelter, but nobody, he said, would take the other one. Because, and this is what he said, because, they played the audio from their phone interview with him, so I was able to hear it in his own words. He said one dog he placed, the other he didn't, because nobody wants a 7-year-old dog with a goofy hip. What an asshole. What an asshole. I hope they do file charges. I hope they do. I'm an animal lover. I'm sick about what happened. Not the right way to go about that whole situation. And we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll file charges. Maybe they won't. But yeah, not a good look for him this week. Please adopt Bundy's cats and do not let them fall into the wrong hands. The point being, whether it's Shamrock or somebody else, I mean, I'm joking with him, but there's a lot of people out there who have no business owning a pet. So hopefully they will all find homes that are good and suitable for them. And it's just a sad story. You know, I had no idea that Bundy was so big into cats and had so many of them. And it's one of those things that you learn about after the fact. Who knew? The New Japan Cup is now over. I am going to get into spoilers here, so if you have not seen the finals yet this morning or read the results and you don't want to be spoiled at all, skip ahead by about 10 minutes or so. Just fair warning. I know people are sensitive about that. Fair warning for those of you who do not want to be spoiled. Let me go back to day 8 first, since I haven't had the chance to talk about the later days of the tournament since last week's podcast, and then I'll work my way up to the finals this morning. I watched the Minoru Suzuki match with Sanada from Day 8, and I thought it was fantastic. It was one of my favorite matches, watching the ones I was able to watch from the tournament this year. So I can't say enough good things about that match and what Suzuki continues to do, you know, even at his age and all the wars he's been through. I mean, I think back to that match he had a few years ago with AJ Styles. I think it was a G1 match, if I'm not mistaken. Just a kind of a random match between the two of them, and I just remember the reaction to it afterwards. You would think that the greatest match in wrestling history had just taken place. And I remember them asking AJ about it, and he was kind of blown away because he probably has a gazillion great matches and didn't think anything of it. And he was also blown away by the response to it. And Suzuki's had a lot of matches like that. And the match with Sanada was no different. Even the match on that same card with Colt Cabana and Toriano is a very fun comedy match, with Cabana getting the somewhat surprising win to advance. I didn't think he was going to win, and he did. And of course, he got bounced out in the next round by Sanada. Day 9, I missed the Ishii match with Yoshihashi. I did see the match with Okada and Will Ospreay. That is worth going out of your way to see. I was not as much a fan of the Tanahashi match with Zack Sabre Jr. Not saying it was a bad match, just not, you know, particularly exciting for me. Okada and Ishii from Day 11 was just all kinds of awesome, as was Sanada and Tanahashi, two great matches. I was happy to see Sanada advance to the finals. Now, you know, when I talked about New Japan on the prediction show, I said, you know, everybody's talking about Jay White and, you know, I'll join in here. Yes, I think he's going to win the championship, although I didn't think it would be this soon. But everybody's talking about Jay White, and I, you know, when and not if is he going to win the title. I said, don't sleep on Sanada. You know, it's not going to happen this year, but he will be champion himself soon enough. And after the matches he's had here in this tournament, I don't think there can be any doubt that this guy is going to be a headliner for New Japan within the next 18 months. If not, he should be. Which brings us to Okada versus Sanada in the finals of the New Japan Cup. I just finished watching the match before I hit record to start the podcast here this week. A great way to end this tournament. Okada came into this match 4-0 against Sanada. Sanada was trying to finally break that streak here. It did not work. Some very close near falls near the end that they did get me with. They had me thinking Sanada had this thing locked up a couple of different times. Sanada missed the moonsault. Okada hit a shotgun dropkick. Sanada rolled through, got right back up, hit a TKO for one of those near falls I just mentioned. So as Sanada is walking to the corner, he's going to go set up for another moonsault. Okada grabs his ankle. He is exhausted. He's just barely holding on to his ankle. He's not letting him walk to the corner. And You know, Sonata kicks him a few times and climbs up top, and then Okada gets up and again grabs the ankle. He's just trying to stop him from hitting his move. Eventually, Okada hits the tombstone, spinning Rainmaker, which looked kind of weak, and then the actual Rainmaker, which he at least put some more oomph behind. One Rainmaker is all it took, and he got the pin. And as Okada was talking after the match, Jay White and Ghetto came out to the ring to interrupt. Jay got on the microphone. He promised to beat Okada in Madison Square Garden. You can't beat me. You've never beaten me before. You won't beat me in New York City. As Okada was walking around ringside, he has the New Japan Cup, right? The big trophy in hand. He's leaving. He's walking around ringside, and he stops to exchange some words with Shibata. Shibata was at ringside. He was doing commentary with the Japanese, on the Japanese end. And Shibata is congratulating him and just paying respect to Okada for winning this tournament here. Shibata's last match was against Okada. He almost died from his injuries there. And very likely will never wrestle again. Never say never, but probably never going to wrestle again. Backstage, you know, they have their little post-show press conference deals. All the reporters huddle around and ask questions, and so they're asking questions to Okada. And one of the reporters asks a question about that moment that he shared with Shibata. And Okada starts crying. And I, like a lot of other people, because the first thing I did, I wanted to find out what the hell did this person ask. That was my first question. He got Okada here to start just bawling his eyes out. And what it was is, and shout out to Chris Charlton here for translating, but he was reflecting back on how 2 years earlier it was Shibata sitting where he's sitting right now giving that same interview coming off of his win in the New Japan Cup. And it was Shibata who actually challenged Okada for the championship in June of that year at the Sakura Genesis show. That's where they had their now famous match where Shibata delivered that headbutt that gave him the brain injury that nearly proved fatal and ended his career. So it's understandable why Okada would all of a sudden be overcome with all of this emotion. But if you see the clips on Twitter, if you hear about, oh, Okada crying, that's what it was. It was the Shibata question, I guess, and he just lost it. Kevin Kelly mentioned, you know, during the match that 4-13 is the record of those who have won the New Japan Cup and gone on successfully to challenge for the IWGP title. Not a great batting average, not exactly Money in the Bank numbers there. That coupled with the fact that Jay White just won the championship and really has not had a chance yet to get going, it's far from a guarantee that they do a title change at MSG. I'm not even sure if the IWGP title match is going on last. My understanding is that the actual main event of that Madison Square Garden show is going to be the Ring of Honor World title match, the Triple Threat, with Jay Lethal and Marty Scurll and Matt Taven. I don't know that for sure, but I don't think it's a lock that the New Japan match is technically headlining the show. But in any event, I don't think that there's no slam dunk guarantee outcome here. I think that's obvious to this match. I would not count out Jay White from retaining under some kind of nefarious means. I hope they do the title change. I think Okada does win it back. I think we may be in for a brief period of sort of hot potato with the title. Jay White is undefeated against Okada. Two matches, the first in last year's G1, and again at Wrestle Kingdom in January. Both times, Jay White beat Okada. And White was pushing that angle in his promo here when he came out. He says, you know, you haven't beaten me. You can't beat me. I'm going to beat you again. So that kind of makes me feel a little bit stronger about the fact that Okada will finally get his big win against Jay White. And what better place to do it than Madison Square Garden? So that's the update on the New Japan Cup. Some great matches. You know, usually I do sad tweet here on the show. This week we have an awesome tweet of the week from the official Twitter account for the Oakland Athletics. On Wednesday, the A's played the Seattle Mariners at the Tokyo Dome, the first regular season MLB games played in Tokyo in 7 years. The Yankees and the Red Sox are going to be playing two games in London in June, so that we got some international baseball going on here. Matt Chapman of the A's made this great barehanded throw out at first base, this great play. This was the tweet that the official A's account put out. They say, we'd usually give a play like this 5 stars, but since it happened at the Tokyo Dome, it deserves 6. And so, yeah, I see it in our group all the time. Everybody loves to, you know, kind of mock Meltzer for the 6 stars and the 7 stars. And if it didn't happen in the Tokyo Dome, it didn't happen at all and all that kind of crap. And so I think Meltzer would not have it any other way. So, yeah, I thought maybe it was like a parody account or something. But no, it's the official account for the Oakland Athletics. And clearly they have a wrestling fan on the staff there. And just like we have a wrestling fan on the staff for the Arby's Twitter account, they tweeted something out about Kenny Omega. And Wendy's is always tweeting about wrestling. And I think I saw Burger King once do it. You know, for all this talk about how much more mainstream wrestling used to feel 20 years ago when it was really hot, sure does seem like there's a lot of wrestling fans planted in all these different places, doesn't it? It is the end of an era. WWE announced this week it will be moving its headquarters in 2021 to a different location in Stamford, Connecticut, and they will likely be selling Titan Towers, which they bought way back in 1985, the year of the very first WrestleMania. They've called that building home ever since. They have shot a lot of angles and a lot of television sequences there. The opening for Raw back in 1995, they filmed this really elaborate sequence at night where they had fans and they had a ring and they did some matches on the roof. And I remember Shawn Michaels dancing around next to the WWF logo. They shot that whole sequence on the roof of Titan Tower. Their 1999 Super Bowl commercial, they shot that inside Titan Tower as well. They've shot a few other angles, including the time Stone Cold became CEO and Brock Lesnar destroyed Triple H's, you know, quote-unquote office and took a sledgehammer to it. And yeah, they did a whole bunch of skits from their corporate offices. Vince's office is wild. We've seen the inside of it a few times. He's done some interviews, and even in Beyond the Mat all those years ago. Although I don't remember if the dinosaur head was on the wall. I don't think it was back then, because it was gifted to him by Triple H. This guy has a T-Rex skull on his wall, in the wall of his office. Like I said, it was a gift from his son-in-law. An actual T-Rex, a fossilized skull. I assume that will be moving as well. I don't think they will leave that behind. But many a time, anybody who lives in New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut, many times I'm sure you've driven down I-95, and I think, I want to say it's by like exit 9 or something, and you see the giant WWE logo or flag or whatever is up there now on top of the building. It's very visible from the highway there. And the main reason for the move is they're bringing together their corporate offices and their production studios. Right now, they're not housed at the same address. They're housed in separate locations. And now they're all going to be together in one location. They're leasing the new office for an initial term of almost 17 years, which includes a free rent period of 18 months with 5 5-year renewal options thereafter. The new space is over 415,000 square feet, 2 buildings that are attached. And how about this? This is what I kind of laughed at when I read this. As far as rent, after that 18-month rent-free period is over, the company will be obligated to pay base rent over the remainder of the initial term in the amount of more than $19 million a year initially, and then increasing to almost $21 million a year on the 6th anniversary of that rent commencement date, and over $22 million per year on the 11th anniversary of the rent commencement date. And here I thought my rent was high, here in Brooklyn. Didn't take long for a few people online to start tweeting that, they should keep the Titan Towers location. Yeah, let's just pay all the money to rent this other building out, and you know, we'll convert it into a WWE museum or a physical WWE Hall of Fame. As if people are just dying to fly to Stamford, Connecticut for a quick vacation to see the WWE Hall of Fame. I mean, look, they did put the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, which I've been to the Baseball Hall of Fame twice in my life, once as a kid, and then again a couple of summers ago. And outside of the Hall of Fame itself, all due respect to the fine folks in Cooperstown, I was bored to tears. Maybe I just didn't know all the right places to visit. Look, it's beautiful. If you like seeing kind of these antique locations and lots of grass and all that kind of crap. But look, there's not a whole lot to do. That's the point. There's not a whole lot to do there. If you're a huge baseball fan, then you're probably in baseball heaven. You get to go and you know, see all the plaques, and they have, and look, it's a great Hall of Fame. It really is. The way they have it set up, and they go through the different periods in history and the periods, you know, segregation and everything else, it's really well done. And a little trivia fact, if you've never been to the Hall of Fame, they have a little TV, and it is around the clock playing the old Abbott and Costello Who's on First routine. I'm a big Abbott and Costello fan, so and I've seen that routine a million times, but when I went to the Hall of Fame the last time, I just sat down and I watched it for like 20 minutes. And they just have it playing, and people just sit down and they watch it as you're walking through all the exhibits. So it's a cool Hall of Fame and all, but as far as the location, not exactly the most exciting place, you know, in the world. If it weren't for the Baseball Hall of Fame, there would be absolutely no reason to visit Cooperstown. Yeah, I've been to the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto. Toronto's a popular city to visit. I'm just thinking of things in terms of what would make sense for WWE. I'm not trying to shit on all these cities. I'm just saying, if I were WWE and I wanted to really bring people in and maximize the experience or maximize the potential for as many people as possible to want to travel, drive, fly in from wherever they're coming from, I would not want to put it in a small town or a small city that is not considered to be a travel destination. It just, to me, doesn't make sense. I was saying the Hockey Hall of Fame, I've been there too. That's in Toronto, and Toronto is a popular city to visit. If you're going to have a WWE Hall of Fame, and I hope they do, certainly if they still had that Times Square location, that would be a sensible place for it, but I think it would make sense to do it from a vacation spot like in Orlando. There were rumors a few years ago they were considering a spot at maybe Universal Studios or something, working with the park. You know, maybe they would even subsidize part of the project. And, I mean, to me, that would be a great location. Plus, it's not far from the Performance Center. They have a base of operations down there. They can very easily have this revolving schedule of talent from the Performance Center and NXT. And maybe even some big-name stars when they're down there training or whatever at the PC that they can bring in for autograph signings and appearances, you know, on certain weekends as a way to lure even more people in to come visit the Hall of Fame, you know. And they could also, look, it goes both ways. You know, you have people coming down to the Orlando area, you can start offering more tours of the Performance Center. I think they do a little bit of that now, but not a lot. People are in town, hey, come on down, pay for a tour. We'll give you a whole tour of the whole facility. Right? Plus, you've got Disney World and Universal and all these other spots that people can go vacation to if they want to make a week or a weekend out of it. Nobody wants to go to Stamford, Connecticut. That probably includes most of the people who work in Stamford, Connecticut. The closest thing we've ever had to a physical WWE Hall of Fame outside of these fan access events that pop up, you know, each year at the WrestleMania host city was here in New York. And I'm not even talking about WWF New York. There was a period a number of years ago, this actually might have been right when they signed with NBC Universal. Inside the NBC store in Rockefeller Center, upstairs, they had an entire floor dedicated to WWE memorabilia. I took pictures of it at the time and tweeted it out. You know, I visited there a couple of different times, and they had a lot of really cool little artifacts and items that were in these glass displays. They had, you know, the blood-soaked contract that was signed for WrestleMania 19 between Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan. Stuff like that. And that was up maybe for a few weeks. It was only temporary, and then they took it down. But even just something as small as that was really cool. Now imagine all of the things, all the items that WWE has in its warehouse. Triple H, I know, has actively, over the last several years, been working to collect various pieces of memorabilia, old title belts, robes. He's collected from all these legends that he's worked with, Bruno Sammartino and Ric Flair, and probably The Warrior, all these people he negotiated with personally to patch things up with the company, bring them in for the Hall of Fame. He's been collecting all sorts of cool items. It deserves a place publicly to be put on display. And hopefully that'll happen one of these days, and hopefully it's in a nice warm destination that everybody can fly out to and can make a vacation out of. Kevin Nash is hosting his annual shenanigans party over WrestleMania weekend at McHale's Pub, just blocks away from Madison Square Garden following the Ring of Honor New Japan show on Saturday, April 6th. Party starts at 11 p.m. Official guests include Al Snow, Melina, Katie Forbes, and a lot more will be added. Invited guests include Rikishi, Val Venus, Terry Runnels, D'Lo Brown, Tonga Kid, DJ Z, who just signed a deal with NXT, so congrats to him, Katarina Winter, the former Katie Lee Burchill from WWE, and more. Platinum VIP and general admission tickets are now all sold out. They are gone, but Gold VIP is still available. That will get you free drinks and access to the VIP lounge all night long. Use promo code SOLOMONSTER and get 10% off of your VIP tickets. Get them at facebook.com/PWR show. Look under the events tab and you'll see the link that you can purchase tickets at, or just go to bit.ly/shenanigansNYC. Monday Night Raw was live from Rosemont, Illinois this past week, and our Twitter poll, over 2,800 votes, just 9% thumbs up, a whopping 91% thumbs down. A great sign here on the road to WrestleMania. Kurt Angle has made his choice. Well, he made WWE's choice for who his final opponent will be at WrestleMania, and no, it is not John Cena. At least not yet. He said there are lots of men that he would like to wrestle, but only one that he wanted to beat, the man who made his life a living hell when he was the general manager of Monday Night Raw, and that man is Baron Corbin. Baron fucking Corbin. Jeremy Corbin would have made for a more interesting opponent. How's that for a WrestleMania match? Kurt Angle against Jeremy Corbin in the battle for Brexit at WrestleMania. Sign me up. Nothing would make me happier, Kurt said, than making Corbin tap out at WrestleMania. If there's nothing in your life that would make you more happier than to wrestle Baron Corbin, you should probably see a therapist. That's all I'm saying. Now, there's been a lot of heated debate about this throughout the week. I was not a fan of this decision. That's me being polite when I say that. And it might make sense storyline-wise. I know there are people who are going to try to make sense of this and go, wait a minute, this makes total sense. Storyline-wise, right? Corbin was a thorn in this guy's side for so long. Of course, the blow-off, the payoff at WrestleMania is Kurt Angle in his final match standing tall with his arm raised high in the air with a big victory, or worse, there'll be people who say, well, no, Kurt Angle shouldn't win. Baron Corbin's the new guy. Baron Corbin's the young buck, and he should get the big win. He should get the rub from Kurt Angle, and he should win at WrestleMania, as if that would be even better, right? That's an even better outcome to all this. Corbin's his final opponent, and Corbin beats him at WrestleMania. Oh yeah, that's what people are dying to see. This is the trilogy that nobody asked for. They wrestled on Raw the night after TLC in December. Angle pinned him with the Angle Slam. Then they wrestled again on Raw the night after the Royal Rumble. That time, Corbin pinned him with the Deep Six. So this would be the rubber match. I've never wanted something to end in a tie more than this feud here. The crowd in Chicago, they gave this the appropriate reaction. One of disgust and disappointment, the standard formula for Monday Night Raw. You could just see the look on Kurt's face. He knew it was a stink bomb from the moment he dropped it. But he had to go out on Instagram after the show to try to explain his decision away. He said, my farewell match will be against Baron Corbin at WrestleMania. I realize it's not the most popular decision from a fan's perspective, but I'm going to make Corbin tap out on the biggest stage of them all. Baron's a legit tough guy. It won't be easy, but it never is. Kurt's own wife, Giovanna, pulled the old tweet and delete this week. She said, the fans chanting, we want Cena, we feel ya. And then after Jim Ross chimed in, he said he thought Angle's pick was underwhelming. She quoted his tweet with the word very. But then she deleted it. She was gotten to. I don't know if she was gotten to by her husband. Said, look, you're not doing me any favors here. You might want to take that down. Now, according to PW Insider, as of that night, for people who were thinking this is all part of a larger plan, it's all part of a larger swerve, calm down. As of that night, they checked with a whole bunch of people, and I would certainly hope things have changed since then, but the announcement was not intended to be a swerve. It was never intended to be a swerve. It was always meant to be Kurt Angle against Baron Corbin. Even though they told the announcers later in the show to go ahead and acknowledge the fact that the fans clearly did not like the move. They openly acknowledged this. Michael Cole was talking about the fan backlash to the decision. You would think, well, the fact that they're drawing attention to this, this must be an admission. You know, surely this is leading to a change in direction. But apparently that wasn't the case. And Angle against Corbin was absolutely the plan when that show went off the air last Monday night. This idea that Kurt Angle got to pick his own opponent at WrestleMania is purely storyline driven. Kurt himself was hoping for somebody more high profile to wrestle in his final match. So let me get this straight. The fans want John Cena. I mean, some fans had other choices. Not everybody wanted John Cena, but I would think the vast majority of the people who were chiming in on who they wanted to wrestle Kurt Angle were picking John Cena. Right? The point is, though, nobody wanted Baron Corbin. Whoever your pick was, Cena or whoever it was, nobody wanted Baron Corbin. If we took a statistical study, if there is somebody out there listening to this right now who wanted Baron Corbin, who said, well, actually, Solomonster, I kind of wanted Baron Corbin. Let's assume that this person, for some god-awful reason, exists. Even if there is somebody out there who wanted to see Kurt Angle against Baron Corbin, it would not be enough to register higher than 0% in a scientific study. That's how few people wanted to see Kurt Angle against Baron Corbin on this show. Angle himself wanted somebody else, so what do? They send him out to the ring to announce Baron Corbin anyway. His own wife goes on social media and bashes it, and now Kurt is in the position where he has to go on social media to do damage control, and even worse, in the storyline, pretend it was all his choice. They're putting all the heat on him for the decision. And this is supposed to be Kurt Angle's grand send-off. These people are morons. Thankfully, according to the WrestleVotes account on Twitter, which they have had a few scoops so far this WrestleMania season, to their credit, especially on the Hall of Fame announcements. Not all of them have panned out, but a lot of them have. They claim that Angle against Corbin is now being reconsidered. WWE did not expect this type of negative reaction, and thus they don't want such a negative feel for Kurt Angle's final match. They might have saved themselves a lot of trouble by actually paying attention to their own social media, which did this informal poll before Raw last week asking the fans who they wanted Kurt Angle's opponent to be. Who do you think it's going to be? Who do you want his opponent to be? Corbin was listed, but so is John Cena, Samoa Joe, Drew McIntyre, Shelton Benjamin. John Cena was the clear favorite. Corbin was whatever the opposite of clear favorite would be. And yet they feign ignorance when it comes to the fan reaction. We had no idea. We had no idea the reaction would be this way. Who knew? How about you push power on your fucking computer? How about you turn on your phone? Wouldn't be that hard to find out. I knew. How is it that I knew and they didn't? What, do I have a mole on the inside? I don't have a mole on the inside. I have a mole on my ass. I don't have a mole on the inside. How is it that I know and you know these things, but they don't? John Cena is the only correct option. He checks all of the boxes. He's a high-profile name, like Kurt wanted, like I think a lot of people wanted. They have a history together. Kurt was Cena's first opponent, and Cena lost. Now Cena can be Kurt's last opponent, and Cena can get his win back, because I do think John Cena should win that match. Now, on Monday, we got Kurt Angle against Kurt Angle Jr., Chad Gable, which is a match that I've talked about. Yeah, you know, I would love one. In a perfect world, great fantasy matchup, Kurt Angle against Chad Gable. And we got that match on Monday night, and it was really sad to watch. I thought Kurt looked terrible in this match. Gable had to slow himself to a crawl for this. By the end, it turned into a fun little glimpse. I mean, it got better towards the end. It was a little glimpse into what might have been had Gable come along years ago when Kurt could still be the old Kurt Angle. He ain't the old Kurt Angle no more. Gable tapped out to the ankle lock. But to me, this was more sad than anything else. And if they actually are planning on sticking with Corbin against Kurt Angle, you know, maybe the idea is a quick squash because they don't think Kurt can go very long. But look, even still, if that's the reason why they chose to go with Corbin and not somebody higher profile, because they think Kurt can only have maybe a really good 5-minute match or something, you know, you could do the same thing with John Cena. You could take anybody and have a really good 5-minute match if that's all they trust him with. I mean, hell, John Cena had a 3-minute match last year against The Undertaker. But this was just sad to watch. It was sad to watch because the Corbin announcement, first of all, killed that crowd dead. Those people were genuinely interested and genuinely excited to find out what Kurt Angle had to say, whether it was Cena or some other big name. They were hanging on his every word, and they wanted as much as anybody to know who the opponent was going to be. And when they found out who it was, they died. That building died after Kurt made that announcement. Then, let's send out Chad Gable for this match. So it was library silent in there for most of the match until they got him into it at the end. Not because of any fault of their own, I don't think, but because that announcement just killed everybody dead. It killed their enthusiasm. But it was sad to watch Kurt also in there moving around like he was wrestling in quicksand. It just sucks to watch these guys get old, more than anything. Could say the same thing about Undertaker. It sucks to get old. It really does. But even, you know, just from his later days in Impact, with Kurt, the fall off in his matches in just, I'd say, the last 2 years has been very noticeable. It's like going back and watching Ric Flair in WWE in 2002, 2003. Just looking at him facially, and then looking at him only a few years later, it's like he aged 20 years in 5. Some guys, they just hit that point, and it's like the aging process just speeds up. And I think that's what we're seeing with Kurt Angle. So yeah, this is his final match. I don't think anybody is expecting a Matt Classic in Angle's last match, regardless of who he is in the ring with. This rub that I still hear some people talking about, it doesn't exist. I said this last week, there is no rub left for him to give in terms of a one-on-one match. I mean, he could endorse somebody. He could go on to become some kind of a manager or like a storyline trainer or training partner or something. I think Kurt could contribute in ways like that. And I guess in that way, he could give rub to a newer guy. But in terms of him getting in the ring, he's going to give the rub to somebody. There's no rub left for him to give. To think otherwise misses the entire point. This is not about giving Baron Corbin a moment. This is about giving Kurt Angle a moment. Sometimes it's the opposite, where you want to put the new guy over and it's about making a new star. That's not what this is about. This should be about Kurt. Not about Corbin or anybody else. His last big moment. And he deserves for that last big moment to come against somebody the fans respect and they see at his level. So I hope they come to their senses and they change the match. You know, they could still promote Kurt Angle against Baron Corbin, and even though they go through with it, have Kurt win in like a quick match, and then out comes John Cena for the impromptu match. But what a waste that would be not to get the great video package treatment to promote this match at WrestleMania, showing Cena's debut on SmackDown against Kurt, showing some of the other moments they've shared in the ring over the years, even the battle rap stuff from SmackDown back then. These guys have a history, and to not touch on it, and let's just send them out there as a surprise, I mean, yeah, it'll get a nice surprise pop from the crowd at MetLife, but I think you're doing a disservice to the story if they don't take the time to tell it. Even if it is only 2 weeks, there's not a lot of time left before WrestleMania. They've really dropped the ball in the promotion of this show, and I'm going to run down the entire WrestleMania card later as things stand, because it's a big card. I'll get into that later in the show, but they've dropped the ball big time on the promotion for WrestleMania this year. It doesn't feel like a WrestleMania. But I really do. I really feel like they're doing a disservice to the story if they don't take the time to tell it. They had the perfect chance last Monday. Unless Cena's out filming a movie somewhere and couldn't physically be there. It's possible, I guess. But apparently it was never the plan for him to be there. So let's assume he was available. That would have been the perfect place to make it official. Bring him on out and make the match. But they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, as they are known to do, and they just complicated things. Let's say they go ahead and now they change their mind and now we get Angle and Corbin, but then Cena comes out. Why does it always have to be so fucking convoluted? You were handed a very easy story here. Just play your cards. That's all you gotta do. Sometimes the simple way is the way to go. You don't have to get totally, you know, complicate the situation. Like the stuff with Kofi, I know there are some people who feel that's what they're doing with Kofi. I wouldn't go that far. I actually like what they're doing with Kofi Kingston right now. But when it comes to the women, there's another example. You know, with Becky and Ronda and Charlotte, they can take something that just should sell itself and doesn't really have to be overcomplicated, and they feel the need to overcomplicate it for no reason. They shoot themselves in the foot. That's what they did here. Now, they can fix this tomorrow night. Raw is in Boston, another place that John Cena has a connection to. I hope they do the right thing. By the way, Kurt Angle's big WrestleMania opponent, Baron Corbin, got cradled and pinned by Apollo Crews later on in the same show. Alexa Bliss, she had Elias on her Moment of Bliss, where he announced that he will be the headline musical act for WrestleMania this year. I guess their favorite son, Flo Rida, wasn't available. They're not in Flo Rida this year. They're in New Jersey. So I guess maybe Springsteen turned him down. Maybe Bruce said, look, I got better things to do that day. Ronda Rousey murdered Dana Brooke. This was great. Dana was challenging for the Raw Women's title. She actually slapped Ronda Rousey, which was a terrible lapse in judgment. Ronda returned fire, step up knee, more knees to the gut, armbar, put her away for the win. 25 seconds, boom, done. She refused to break the hold. It was a great looking armbar too, probably the best one she's used on TV since her debut last year at WrestleMania. Dana was screaming in agony. Ronda knocked down one of the referees. She was surrounded on the outside. Her husband, Travis Brown, was in the front row. He threw a punch, knocked down one of the security guards, snatched his wife over the barricade, and they left together. This was great. I love this. Killer Ronda is great. And in storyline now, her husband has been barred from ringside. So I don't know if that applies to WrestleMania. I don't know. I guess we'll see. But apparently he's been storyline banned from all future events. 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks. We've had two subpar segments now with Batista. Two in a row. I thought this sucked. I am so unmoved by the build to this match with Triple H and Batista so far. I am thoroughly disappointed with the way that this thing is being promoted. Batista was live via satellite from his home, aka taped backstage from the week before. He said that he doesn't like Triple H, flat out. I don't like the guy. Goes back long before Evolution. He only groomed me to be his muscle and wanted me as his protection. Triple H held me down. He also blamed Triple H for why he quit WWE all those other times. He says Triple H is jealous of him. He's jealous of his Hollywood success. He didn't think he was a star. Now he's a big-time movie star, and he did it without Triple H. He did it in spite of him. Triple H has everybody fooled, he said. And he hopes that Vince McMahon wakes up and fires him. This just doesn't work. Being jealous of him, of his Hollywood success, I can buy into. You know what would have been a great story to tell? And I don't remember if it was in The Observer or where it was at the time. But go back a few years before the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie came out. I think it was when Batista left the company. He did the little, after Evolution broke up again and he wanted his one-on-one title match that he was owed. He won the Royal Rumble that year. That was when they added Daniel Bryan to the main event, made it a triple threat, and he tapped out Batista to win the world title. And Batista never did get his one-on-one championship match. And so it was after the Shield had beaten Evolution, and Batista said, I want my match. And Triple H wouldn't give it to him, and he said, well, adios. And that was it. He left. And I think at the time, and maybe Batista actually has talked about this. In fact, now that I think about it, I'm sure that's where this is from. I think it's from Batista himself in interviews that he's given. He wanted to, or offered anyway, to come back a few months later so he can A, promote his movie, but, come back and work an angle or whatever. But he wanted to come back and promote the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. And one of the things that legit bothered him and why there was some heat between him and the company there for a while after he came back and then left again is because he talked about meeting with Triple H and Stephanie, and basically Triple H laughing in his face when it came to this idea that the Guardians of the Galaxy movie that he was in was going to be a big hit. And look, Triple H probably never even heard of the Guardians of the Galaxy before. I don't think he's collecting comic books, and he isn't up on all of his comic book characters. So who knew, I guess, how big it truly would become? I mean, a lot of people knew how big it would become. I don't necessarily fault Triple H for not being in the loop on that, but it really bothered Batista. And so all of a sudden, this movie becomes this gigantic hit. It makes over $1 billion, I think. It spawned off into this big multi-billion dollar franchise. But that left a really sour taste in his mouth. He was basically almost like he was being mocked. And that was when communication between the two sides just broke down. Why not incorporate that into the storyline? Why not tell that story? That's a real story. That, to me, I would find that more compelling. That exact story. You know, you can take creative license with it if you want to, but, you know, why not come out and tell that story? No, instead they have him here talking about, you know, evolution and you know, when I was in evolution, he held me back. When you were in evolution, there are people who are watching the product now who were in fucking diapers when evolution was a thing. You're going all the way back to evolution? I'm talking evolution the first time, not the last time they reformed. So all of a sudden, this is why he's back now? This is why he's wanted this match with Triple H for all these years, and now he's coming back to get his big match because Triple H was holding him back in evolution fucking 15 years ago? He didn't seem to have a problem reforming evolution a few years ago with him. You know, and even if he is kind of referring to the evolution reunion a few years ago, which I don't think he is, it's a very weak story. All of a sudden, he's back to get this match off something from all those years back. It just feels like they're reaching way too hard to manufacture something from a story that's already been done before. This story was done going into their match at WrestleMania 21. That was 14 years ago. Him bringing up how he hopes that Vince McMahon fires his son-in-law, that only reinforces my belief that this should have been Big Dave representing Vince McMahon against Triple H at WrestleMania in a match for control of the company. They could have easily explained it as Vince calling up Batista. He didn't have to twist the man's arm too hard to come in and end Triple H's career because he was very bitter about Hunter not letting him come back. Because he was still, you know, Triple H supposedly was very upset with the way Batista quit years ago. And so the story is that he didn't want Dave back in the company. So Vince sort of sidestepped him. He brings Batista back. Batista's more than happy to come back. This story makes sense. Right? Comes back, challenges him to a match at WrestleMania on behalf of Vince. And all of a sudden now we've got some real stakes on the line here in this match. High stakes. I mean, I'm listening to Batista talk here, and I'm wondering why exactly is Triple H even supposed to be the babyface in all this? It just all seems way too forced. I hope the match exceeds the hype. It's no holds barred. It gives them a lot of toys and a lot of gimmicks to play with. They may be able to have a really fun brawl. But this is just awful so far. I'm not feeling this at all. It's just one gigantic letdown. I don't know if 2 weeks is enough to turn it around. We'll see. I hope they can. Because I was really looking forward to Batista coming back just as a television character. I didn't have high hopes for the match. But, you know, Hollywood heel Dave Batista, I think there was a lot of potential there. And now we're 2 weeks out, and I see what a waste that this has really been so far. And I'm wondering, why exactly is Batista the Hollywood heel? Again, what... this story is just, it just feels ass backwards to me. Drew McIntyre challenged Joe to a fight at WrestleMania. Not Samoa Joe, the other Samoan named Joe, Roman Reigns. Since I guess we're shooting now. He told him not to accept for the sake of his wife and kids. Although he did challenge him, so I'm not sure why he would tell him not to accept. He said that Joe beat leukemia, but he can't beat him at WrestleMania. Drew McIntyre is apparently more deadly than cancer. He had a good match with Seth Rollins here on the show in the main event. I really did enjoy their match, at least until the finish. Rollins was getting ready for the curb stomp when Brock Lesnar's music hit. Rollins had an attack of dumb babyface syndrome, falling for the old musical distraction finish. When he turned around, he ate a Claymore kick and got pinned. That ending sucked. To what I thought otherwise was a very good match. But that ending sucked. The WrestleMania build on this Raw side, and I have to be very clear when I say that I'm talking more Raw than SmackDown. But the WrestleMania build on this Raw side feels more like the build to No Mercy than it does WrestleMania. That should not be. It should not be. Now, one good thing they did on Monday, WWE announced they will honor longtime front office employee Sue Aitchison as the Warrior Award recipient this year at the WWE Hall of Fame. I think this is a great choice. I think it's one that is more in line with what Warrior had originally intended. For those of us who remember his speech talking about Jimmy Miranda, who had to do on the merchandise side of things, and he was more, it's not exactly, because he wasn't talking, I think, so much about front office employees as much as he was talking about the people behind the scenes, whether it's with the trucks or the rings or the merchandise, people like that. I think you could lump front office staff in there too, because there are people who have worked for the company a very long time who, you know, keep that machine going. And this woman is one of the biggest parts of that. You know, she has been with this company since 1986. 33 years working for Vince McMahon, and she survived. She has she's recognized for leading their outreach programs, helped start the company's relationship with Make-A-Wish. I think that's really the biggest credit to her name. And also, for those who don't know, I admit I did not know this until this week myself, but she played the Duchess of Queensberry for the match between Chris Jericho and William Regal back at Backlash 2001. It was just this one-off ridiculous stipulation for a match where the Duchess kept changing the rules. She was sitting at ringside looking like the royal queen in this ridiculous outfit. And that was Sue Aitchison. She played the Duchess, and she would change the rules on Jericho, and he was about to win the match, and she, you know, helped Regal win. She was there. Regal was the commissioner at the time. So, little Easter egg. I don't know that she's been on television really any other time, although, and somebody will correct me if I'm wrong on this, when Vince McMahon had that segment on SmackDown, where he had the desk set up in the ring, and he was looking for a new assistant, he did a segment where he was inviting various people to come out to interview for the position. One of the people who came out was Dave Lagana. Dave Lagana was a writer, a young writer for WWE at the time. He spent many years there. I've interviewed him here on the podcast before, and now he's working with Billy Corgan, doing good things with the NWA brand. But he came out. He was the guy who was acting all effeminate, and when he got in the ring, Vince immediately kicked him out. That was Lagana. Then he invited out another lady who I believe he identified, or she identified herself as Sue Aitchison. But I don't think it was her. This lady looked, from what I can remember, very different. She had like kind of longer shoulder-length blonde hair and glasses. And I think they were just using Sue's name as like a little inside joke. I don't think it was actually her. But somebody can go back and correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure the woman who came out said her name was Sue Aitchison. And Vince was impressed, and he was going to hire her, and then Stacy Keibler came out and kicked the woman out, and Stacy got the job, because of course. So anyway, I think it's a great pick. I would like to see more people like this, you know, be honored. And also, there are a lot of people in the company that you and I don't even know about. We probably don't even know they exist. We don't know what they do. There was a great video on WWE's YouTube channel this week about this guy, Mark Carpenter, the guy who makes the rings for WWE. And they did this whole video about making the rings for WrestleMania 29, the last time they were at MetLife Stadium, how they made heated rings because the weather conditions were unpredictable and they had to make sure the ring was heated at a stable temperature. And so now they're going through this all over again because WrestleMania is coming back to MetLife. It's going to be early April in New Jersey. It could be 50 degrees and sunny, or it could be 20 degrees with snow on the ground. There's no way to know what the weather is going to be like. I can vouch for that here in New York. The weather has been very up and down all winter. And so it showed him working with his staff there to, you know, start putting the ring together for WrestleMania. And he's been with the company since WrestleMania 6. They hired him initially to come in and help create those little ring carts that were bringing the wrestlers to and from the ring in 1990 at WrestleMania 6. And he's been with the company ever since. I got an insight into this guy that I didn't know. I gained a newfound respect for this guy that I didn't have before. Those are the kind of people, I think, who should be honored with this award. And so I think it's a great pick. SmackDown Live from Indianapolis. Over 2,600 votes in the Twitter poll. 70% thumbs up, 30% thumbs down. I'm guessing a lot of people salty over the finish of the Gauntlet match. I thought it was great. I'll talk more about that in a minute. The Miz came out. First time we've seen him since Shane McMahon turned on him at Fastlane. He came out for this impassioned babyface promo, and I thought he actually did a hell of a job with it. I didn't know what to expect here. I'm not a big believer of Miz as this great babyface character, but right now he's making it work, and the fans are buying into it, and I thought he did a hell of a job here. He came out, he talked about how one of the greatest moments for him was watching his father standing with him in the ring and telling him how proud he is, and it was Shane McMahon who helped make that happen. And everybody had warned him. Everybody in the locker room had warned him about Shane and how he's very different on camera in the ring than he is when he's behind the scenes. And he says he realized, he goes, Shane is rotten to the core, just like his father. He said, you don't own me, just like you don't own Kofi Kingston. I wasn't born rich. People told me I was average, I would never be successful, and I proved them all wrong. And I won the WWE Championship. Did it all on my own. And he did the whole thing where you can boo me or you can cheer me, but I always have great work ethic. And, you know, my father didn't give me love. I had to earn his love and respect. Just like with the fans, I had to earn their respect. It was just this classic, you know, in a lot of ways, very sort of like the template of a great babyface promo. But he hit on all the right points and seemed very passionate about it and you know, honest about it and believed in what he was saying, which is important. And so now we go into a WrestleMania match that of all the matches on this card is one of the best promoted WrestleMania matches of the show this year. Who would have thought that 6 months ago that Shane McMahon against The Miz would be one of the best promoted WrestleMania matches? As good of a job as they've done, I think that's more of an indictment on their promotion of the WrestleMania card this year. I don't think that's an entirely great thing, but I enjoyed this, and I actually find myself looking forward to the match. Call me crazy. I'm looking forward a lot more to that match than I am some of the other ones that I should be looking forward to, like one I just got done talking about. We had AJ Styles. He was backstage doing a promo, vowing to beat Randy Orton at WrestleMania, wishing Kofi Kingston good luck in his efforts in the Gauntlet match. On Twitter, AJ very casually mentioned that he signed a new contract with WWE, and he got a new puppy. He didn't say the puppy was part of the deal, but he also didn't say it wasn't. Mm-hmm. Vince McMahon is upping the ante in his fight to keep talent from leaving and going to All Elite Wrestling. Now he's throwing in puppies as an added bonus. Now we know how he got Jerry Lawler to sign that new deal a couple of months ago. Those were different puppies, but puppy seems to be his secret weapon. Rey Mysterio's son Dominic, all grown up, he's twice his father's size. He will be ringside for Rey's match against Samoa Joe for the U.S. title at WrestleMania. He's going to be there to watch his father, as he said, beat the bully, Samoa Joe. You know, his son has been training for a while now. I wouldn't mind a spot where Joe chokes him out, just to kind of add some heat to this feud, keep it going for a few more pay-per-views. We had Kevin Owens out for the Kevin Owens Show. Boy, is he falling fast. He came back. The original idea was going to be Kevin Owens challenging Daniel Bryan for the WWE title at WrestleMania. He's gone from a guaranteed championship match at WrestleMania to not having a match at this point. I'm sure he'll be there maybe in the Battle Royal. Or maybe they'll still add him to the title match. Maybe it will be, you know, a triple threat or a fatal four-way. I think that ship has sailed with Owens and Mustafa Ali being part of it. This needs to be one-on-one. Bryan and Kofi. Owens or Ali, they would just feel shoehorned in there now. Kind of like what they're doing with the Raw women's title match. They're obviously not opposed to shoehorning people in there. They want to be in there. But now that has to be one-on-one. And so now Owens has no obvious match at WrestleMania. Now he's back to hosting talk shows. He put over, but he's still total babyface, came over. He put over Kofi. He talked about the women. He brought out Charlotte and Becky Lynch as his guests. Becky got this huge pop on her way out. And so it was just a lot of back and forth. I mean, nothing out of the ordinary, you know, that we haven't heard between these two. The good thing is it wasn't just the back and forth jabs. They went at it. A big brawl broke out. They brawled all over ringside, over by the announce table. So, you know, for what it was, just to kind of add some more heat between Charlotte and Becky without the focus being on Ronda. Because look, like it or not, Charlotte's in this match, and you've got to find a way to, you know, put some heat on her and kind of get her involved here. And so they did as good of a job as they could do. You know, we can only see so many brawls, I feel like, between Becky and Charlotte, but this was fine for what it was. Kofi Kingston. This show was built around one thing and one thing only. That was Kofi Kingston running the gauntlet against The Bar, Rowan, Samoa Joe, and Randy Orton. It opened with Kofi against Sheamus. It took almost 15 minutes, but Kofi did beat him with the Trouble in Paradise. Then he beat Cesaro with the SOS. At that point, WWE sent out an SMS, text message alert, during the match that read, and I quote, Kofi Kingston defeats Cesaro. Rowan is up next for the Dreadlocked Dynamo. Was I not just talking about this last week? This nonsense with their nicknames that they insist on giving everybody? It looks like Kofi put his $10 PayPal donation in this week for his wrestling nickname. Somebody said that to me on Twitter. I said, that's exactly what I thought. What makes this even worse is that apparently, and I didn't know this, but I got tweets from a lot of you guys telling me that, wait a minute, this name's been around for a while. You've never heard of this before. I said, no, this is not a new name. He has had this name going back at least to 2011, maybe earlier than that, but at least 2011. That's the earliest reference I was able to find to the name the Dreadlock Dynamo. Somebody sent me a random tweet from a fan dated January 2nd, 2011, asking, when did they start calling Kofi Kingston the Dreadlock Dynamo? I'm asking myself the same question, and it's 8 years later. But that makes it so much worse, because that means that they had at least 8 years to come to their senses. The Dreadlocked Dynamo. Holy shit. At least they don't call him that on TV. I don't think I've ever heard them actually call him that. Sounds like a dot-com thing, or a thing internally just for marketing purposes. That's not the only nickname he's ever had. For a while, many years ago, when he was the Intercontinental Champion, they called him the Wildcat. Wildcat Kofi Kingston. See, that I actually kind of like. That flows a lot better. Wildcat I would be okay with, although it makes me think of Chris Harris, which is not good. But Wildcat I'd be okay with. The Dreadlocked Dynamo? That can go die in a fire. The only nickname he should have after WrestleMania is WWE Champion. Up next was Rowan. He came out, he got himself disqualified by hitting Kofi with a chair. Then he gave him the Iron Claw Slam through the announce desk. So Kofi's done for. He's laid out. We then hear Samoa Joe's music. Out to pick the bones. So they wrestle for a few minutes. I don't know why Joe didn't... Well, I know why. I mean, it wasn't booked this way. But logically speaking, Joe should have just come out and either let the guy get counted out or roll him in the ring and choke him out. But they wrestled for a few minutes and he went for a muscle buster, which he has not hit since the match with the was a dark match or a main event match, but dark match against Tyson Kidd. He has not actually hit the muscle buster. He's teased it a few times. He's gotten people up for it, has not hit the move. So he teased it here. Kofi reversed it into a cradle and he pinned him. He pinned the United States champion. That brought out Randy Orton, Kofi's old nemesis, who I don't know how many of you picked up on it, but when they were wrestling outside, Orton looked in the camera and called him stupid yet again. When Orton went for the RKO, Kofi rolled him up and pinned him to win the gauntlet. 60 minutes this match lasted. Kofi Kingston punched his ticket to WrestleMania, except he didn't. Vince McMahon came out. He said, congratulations, but you're not done yet. He barred Kofi, or rather Big E and Xavier, who came out to celebrate. He barred them from ringside. He banished them to the back. And he announced that you've got one more opponent to beat if you want to go to WrestleMania. And out came the WWE champion, Daniel Bryan. Bryan attacked Kofi with kicks. He put the lapel lock on him. Kofi was able to make the ropes. He hit the SOS. He did get a near fall out of it, but in the end, it was Kofi being pinned after the running knee, and Daniel Bryan gets the win. He shatters Kofi's dreams for now of going to WrestleMania. And I thought that the way they did this was frustrating, sure, but if you're following the story, you know where this is going. I'm still amazed there are this many people who get angry and post things like, fuck WWE, fuck this company, I can't believe they did that, as though they really think that they're screwing over Kofi Kingston. I'm a little scared, to be honest with you. I'm a little frightened by these people. And that they don't see what's going on here, and that this is just part of the natural story that they're building to, with Kofi getting his championship match. The thing I didn't agree with here, I didn't agree with both Joe and Randy Orton being pinned clean like that with the same fluky roll-up finish. There's no creativity behind it. I didn't think it was necessary to beat both of them clean. If you want to get a fluky cradle on one, okay, but I was stunned they didn't have AJ Styles come out at the end and give Kofi the assist in some way, or distract Randy, hopefully not off his stupid theme music playing, but just in some way. And yeah, it would cheapen the win, I guess, but you know, Kofi got a fluke roll-up. That's not a cheap way to win? Get a flash pin? What does it really mean? So that, I didn't agree with that. I would have had AJ come out and add a little heat between him and Orton and cost Orton the match. The main thing I wish they would do is come up with a logical explanation for why Vince McMahon keeps screwing over Kofi Kingston and does not want him in the WrestleMania main event despite all of the fan support. Kofi's got a lot of people on his side right now. They're very vocal. It just doesn't make sense. His excuse a few weeks ago that we need somebody who's box office. Kofi isn't box office. I mean, is that still his excuse? That flies in the face of what he stood in the ring and told all of us in December about giving the fans what they want. I mean, I guess technically it was Triple H who said that. All the more reason why I wish they would have gone with the idea of a power struggle between them, but in any event. But it was only a few months ago they were standing in the ring and they were, you know, talking about, we're going to improve things and shake things up and give the people what they want. You are the authority. Remember, you and me were all the authority. Well, the fans are pretty vocal about Kofi, and yet Vince McMahon comes out every week on TV to screw this guy over, and there's no real explanation for it other than the obvious. And it looks like they're tiptoeing around it without actually saying it. That is that Vince McMahon is a gigantic racist and does not want to see Kofi Kingston win the WWE title because people like him don't win the WWE title. They may have won the big gold belt. They might have won the IC title and the tag team titles and the US title, but not the WWE title. People like him are there to dance and be funny, just like the New Day. It's the Triple H Booker T thing all over again. That's the only reasonable conclusion to draw from all of this if you're following this story. Big E drove that point home with a video that he tweeted to really try to give this story an air of reality. And no, New Day is not leaving. They're not quitting the company. Something else people seem to be buying into in some circles. Again, I'm stunned by how many people are talking about this from like a work shoot viewpoint as though there's any question. I mean, actually, I guess In a small way, it's kind of cool because it shows kayfabe isn't totally dead. It's in a coma. It's on life support. It's hooked up to tubes. But there is still some brain activity. So that I guess, is a little cool. Still frightening, but cool. What they're doing here is they're blurring the lines. They're playing off this idea that a lot of people have, and you can agree with it or you can disagree with it, but it is a lot of people have this idea. And there's no denying the way that this company has positioned and portrayed a lot of its black stars over the years. They dance, they shook, they jive. I mean, how many times have we seen this? So, they're playing off of that. Big E did a very effective job, I thought, with his video after SmackDown. He said he was very frustrated. He said, we see what the game is. People like us only get so far. They'll let you climb the mountain. But as far as getting to the peak and staying at the peak, it's not the thing that people like us historically and moving forward clearly we can only get so far. And at the end of his video, he teased, you know what, New Day, maybe we're going to walk away from this. Maybe it's not worth it anymore. Being gone 250 plus days a year, doing what we do to our bodies, maybe it's not worth it. Xavier Woods, he continued to push that narrative with his own video. He said, look, we have other things that we enjoy doing. We have other skills. Me, I have video games. And he said, considering the fact that I'm trying to create a small video game studio right now, that's another skill that I have. That's another way I can feed myself and feed my family. He said, being treated the way we are, being treated the way that we've been treated lately, and most likely will be treated going forward, I just wanted to tell all of you that I appreciate what Vince McMahon has done. Thank you very much, because it has definitely shown me the direction that I need to go in to take care of my family and myself. Now, do they need to be playing the race card in this storyline? Of course not. No, they don't. Kofi could have been the underdog just fine without it, having nothing to do with the color of his skin. They didn't have to go down this road. But now, there can be no doubt that they're playing the race angle here, and it's something a lot of black fans can relate to. God knows, I've gotten my share of dozens of questions here into the show, into the mailbag over the years. You know, that in all the years I've been doing this podcast, from a lot of different people about the way that black talents have been portrayed in WWE, or the lack of black WWE champions. And wherever you stand on this issue, the perception is absolutely there. And it does bother a lot of people. It's something they can relate to. In listening to what Big E and Xavier are saying in their promos, in their videos, it sounds to me like what they may do, and I think it was Brian Maxwell Mann. He used to write for WWE. He hit the nail right on the head. I think this is exactly what we're in for. I think what's likely to happen on Tuesday is New Day is going to go and they're going to ask to be released from their contracts. On TV, they're going to come out, they're going to request Vince McMahon's presence, and they're going to ask for their release. If you're going to continue to fuck with us, if Kofi is not getting his match at WrestleMania, if there's no future for us here, we want out. And Vince, of course, will refuse. But then AJ Styles comes out, and he asks for his release if Kofi doesn't get his WrestleMania match. Which probably would have been better had he not gone on Twitter and said that he just signed the new WWE deal, but that's neither here nor there. AJ says he wants his release. Kevin Owens comes out. He says, I want my release. The Usos, they want their release. Your tag team champions, right? Brothers in arms with the New Day. Of course, they're going to back them up. We saw them backstage standing next to Big E and Xavier on Tuesday night, cheering on Kofi during the gauntlet. They'll come out, I'm sure, stand with them in solidarity. They ask for their release. And soon there's so many stars coming out asking for their release. Cody and the Bucks are just popping the champagne cork. And Vince, with his entire roster, threatening to walk out if he doesn't give them their release, finally relents and tells Kofi Kingston, you've got your match with Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. And then Kofi goes to WrestleMania, he pins Daniel Bryan, and Vince walks out and he says, I never said it was for the WWE title, ha ha! And that's how WrestleMania goes off the air. No. Actually, you know what? I say no, I wouldn't put it past them, but now, he gives Kofi his WrestleMania title match, and that's how this thing pays off in the end. So basically, it's just a different twist on the Occupy Raw angle they did with Daniel Bryan 5 years ago. I don't want them to copy the exact same angle and do it the exact same way. Yeah, at least if you're going to take an idea, you know, mold it and shape it in a different way. Put a little twist on things. I think that's what they're going to do. In a perfect world. New Day would come to SmackDown on Tuesday, and instead of having people feel sorry for them, they'd fuck some shit up. No more playing around, no more booty-os, no more pancakes. Give us what we earned. It's like if you hired somebody to do a job for you and they decided not to pay when the job was done, if you're messing around with the wrong people, you'd get both your kneecaps broken. I'd love to see the New Day come out and bust some kneecaps. Trade those pancakes for pipes. And fuck some shit up. That's what I'd like to see. But I don't think that's what we're going to get. I think the first idea is what we're going to see on Tuesday. And that's okay too. They've created a story here that makes you feel something. Which is more than I can say for Brock Lesnar against Seth Rollins. Where the only thing I feel is apathy. They have a lot of people invested in this Kofi story. He's going to WrestleMania. He's going to wrestle for the championship. I don't know if he's going to win the championship. I think the worst thing WWE could do after a story like this, if this is the path they've chosen to go down, is to have Kofi get bookered. That would be the worst thing that could happen. They have to go all the way with this and give people the big dramatic win. I will warn you, though, even if Kofi Kingston wins at WrestleMania, and he's got a lot of people pulling for him, don't expect any kind of special run for Kofi Kingston as the WWE champion. He may win at WrestleMania, he should, but he's not their chosen one. He's not their guy to be the champion. Neither was Daniel Bryan in 2014 when he won the title, and look what they did with him. Look what they had him doing after WrestleMania that year. Feuding with Kane, he and his wife running away from Demon Kane in the parking garage. Then he got hurt, and he had to surrender the title, so he never really had much of a chance. But he wasn't focused on, really, in any kind of special way. Those few weeks gave us a very poor glimpse into what the future of Daniel Bryan looked like as the champion. Supposedly, he was going to be the one going to SummerSlam that year and getting squashed by Brock Lesnar, not John Cena. It was only Cena because Bryan went down, and Cena became the sacrificial lamb. That spot was reserved for Daniel Bryan. So that gives you kind of a sense of the kind of big run for the big fan favorite that they had planned for Daniel Bryan in 2014. You honestly think in 2019 with Kofi Kingston, if he wins the championship, that it's going to be any different? If anything, it's going to be worse. It'll be shorter. You know, anybody who has these images in their head of Kofi Kingston winning the title and becoming this big-time main event player and having some kind of long AJ Styles type or CM Punk type run with the belt, you're in for a big rude awakening. They may give us the feel-good moment, and one day when he's old and shriveled up making convention appearances, Kofi will be able to advertise himself as former WWE champion, Kofi Kingston. But don't expect some kind of long, memorable run for this guy with the belt. In fact, I would expect Daniel Bryan to win the belt back not long after. I don't think they changed the look of the championship and created this hemp belt as a gimmick to last all of 6 weeks. Because I don't think going into WrestleMania, the plan was for Bryan to lose. It may not be. It still may not be. Bryan may win. But even if he loses, I don't expect that he'll be without that championship very long. I'm just being realistic about this. And I think you should be too. Once we get to the payoff, I would not bet on there being any kind of meaningful change in the way that this guy is positioned on this show. And then you're going to have a lot of very angry people saying, oh, it's not fair. They did him dirty. What a waste of a run. When you have to remember, always remember, he was never supposed to get this run in the first place. And when the fans fuck with their plans, they tend to resent us for it. I said I was going to get into the WrestleMania card. Here is the never-ending WrestleMania lineup. As things stand today, March 24th, it's the day before Raw, the second-to-last Raw before Mania. WrestleMania in New York, at least according to WWE. You would never know that it was in New Jersey. They've told all of their performers and all of their announcers to call it New York. I guess because they're ashamed that it's in New Jersey. I hope these fans flying in for the show don't fly into Newark Airport thinking that it's New York. I hope they don't fly into Newark Airport, period, but that's a different story. No Undertaker match yet, which means if he misses this show, it would be the first time that he has missed WrestleMania since 16. That's almost 20 years ago. I would think he'll end up making some kind of a surprise cameo. I'd be fine with a WrestleMania entrance for The Undertaker every year and no match. That's really what the attraction is at this point, right? The lights go out, you hear the gong, the lightning, the music, the smoke. And then he could just turn around and go right to the back. I'd be okay with that. But I would expect some kind of a surprise cameo here. I know he and his wife were spotted at the Performance Center this week. Elias is the official musical headliner this year. He's been calling out legends like John Cena and The Undertaker. Maybe Undertaker gives him a tombstone, or maybe they have an impromptu match. He will be on the Saudi Arabia show in May. That much we do know. He will be on the Saudi show. He knows where the real money is. He knows that sweet Saudi money. So he'll be on that show. WrestleMania, though, It's a little more questionable at this point. PW Insider also had a report claiming that for the first time in years, WWE is bringing in Hulk Hogan for WrestleMania weekend. Speaking of the Saudi show, he was on the last one. He was the host. They announced at the very last minute, and they didn't make any mention of it after the fact. It was like, it was almost like a dark appearance in a way, even though it did air on TV. But he has not really been seen since, and so they're going to bring him in for WrestleMania weekend. No word if that means he'll be making an appearance on the actual show, but they say he could. The report, anyway, says he could be there in large part to induct his friend Brutus the Barber Beefcake into the WWE Hall of Fame. Beefcake is also being brought in for WrestleMania weekend. His name has been floating around as a potential Hall of Fame inductee. He and Hogan were thick as thieves, best friends for years and years, going back to when they first broke into the wrestling business. They had a falling out in recent years, but recently they kissed and they made up, and so they're now bosom buddies again. Beefcake was over for a while with the barber character in the late 80s in WWE, you know, for all the fun that we can make of all the gimmicks and everything else. Before injuries and that parasailing injury to his face derailed his career, Brutus the Barber Beefcake as a character in WWE was actually pretty popular. Never won any championships, but he had at least one pay-per-view main event. Actually, I think he had more than that. But he had the SummerSlam 89 tag match. It was him and Hogan against Macho King and Zeus. And then they had a No Holds Barred, the match, the movie, pay-per-view special where they had a tag team cage match a few months after that. So he was featured in some pretty prominent positions. Of course, WrestleMania 9, wearing the ridiculous face mask. He and Hogan challenged. They didn't win, but they challenged Money Inc. for the tag team titles. That was before Hogan came back out later in the show and won the world title. So the Beefcake character, the barber character going into the Hall of Fame is fine with me. I mean, they've put a lot of characters from that era in, and Beefcake is as deserving as any of those characters. If that's what they're basing it on, they need names, and Beefcake certainly had a name. And no doubt he benefited from being buddies with Hogan. But I do think it's important, and you have to be fair about this, to point out that for a while, he was popular. Now, I don't know what this means as far as a Hart Foundation induction. WWE still has not announced it. A lot of the other rumored names have panned out, but so far no announcement of Bret Hart, Jim Neidhart, and Jimmy Hart being inducted together as the Hart Foundation. Supposedly members of the Hart family were already making plans to travel in for the ceremony, so I don't think it was some, you know, bullshit report. It's possible that they got bumped after they made the call to put DX in the Hall of Fame. You know, we'll see. I mean, there's 2 weeks left to go. That could mean two more inductions. Let's say Beefcake is one of them. That would leave one more. It doesn't look, I haven't heard a thing about Bam Bam Bigelow being put in posthumously. You know, he and King Kong Bundy both, New Jersey natives, not in the Hall of Fame. This would have been a good year to put at least one of them in. But anyway, here's the rundown as things stand. Ronda Rousey defends the Raw Women's Championship against Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. We've got Brock Lesnar defending the Universal Championship against Seth Rollins. Daniel Bryan, not official yet, but he will be defending the WWE title against Kofi Kingston. Batista gets his match with Triple H, no holds barred. The last match of Batista's career. Unless, of course, the Saudi prince asks for Drax the Destroyer on WWE's next show. I don't think he would do it, you know, to be serious about that. I don't think Batista would go over there to wrestle for any amount of money. It's like John Cena last time argued didn't want to go to Saudi Arabia. Apparently Roman Reigns, had he not gotten sick, he was not planning on going over. Daniel Bryan didn't want to go over. I can't imagine that Batista would, you know, and seeing some of the things he writes about on Twitter and stuff, I'd be stunned. Even if they made a big money offer to him, if he would ever go over there to do a show. So anyway, he gets Triple H here on this card. We get another final match, the final match for Kurt Angle. He takes on Baron Corbin as things stand, and what hopefully turns out to not be the case. And the real last match is against John Cena, which would be 2 years in a row if that happens, of Cena going into WrestleMania with an impromptu match. If they don't announce anything until the show itself and they send him out there as a surprise, that would be two straight years of impromptu matches for John Cena at WrestleMania. Drew McIntyre will fight Roman Reigns. AJ Styles takes on Randy Orton. So what does that make now? Seven? I think we're up to seven matches so far. Okay, let's keep going here. Samoa Joe competes in his very first WrestleMania. He defends the United States Championship against Rey Mysterio. Poor Andrade. You know, the original plan is reported to have been Rey against Andrade Cien Almas. And that seemed to be where things were headed. And then, well, plans change. Now he'll be relegated to Battle Royal duty this year because I don't see another spot for him on this show. Shane McMahon takes on The Miz. And I said this earlier, I'll say it again. One of the best built matches on the WrestleMania card this year. I think that speaks volumes about the WrestleMania card itself. But I'm actually kind of looking forward to that match in a way. Sasha Banks and Bayley defend their women's tag team titles against Nia Jax and Tamina. Oh, God. Nia Jax and Tamina. The Iconics and the Divas of Doom. Natty and Beth Phoenix in a fatal four-way. Asuka. You remember Asuka, don't you? The SmackDown Women's Champion, who was absent from television again this week. They announced after the show on WWE.com that she will defend her title at WrestleMania on the kickoff show, I'm sure. They didn't say that, but you know there's a chance, a good chance. Defending her title against the winner of a fatal four-way match this Tuesday between Mandy Rose, Sonya Deville, Carmella, and Naomi. My guess, they all end up being added somehow because I don't think they have enough women for a battle royal this year. I read somewhere that they are planning to do a women's battle royal. I don't see it unless you fill it with half of the NXT women's roster. I don't think there's enough women to do the battle royal this year. So anyway, if they put them all in the SmackDown women's title match, that would get all of those ladies on the show. If there is one winner, I think it's Naomi. And we get a battle of the former tag team partners. The fact that Asuka is in such, just the state that she is in is such an afterthought going into the show, and she is the champion, I find that absolutely disgusting. Absolutely revolting that she is as champion in the position that she's in right now. Buddy Murphy defends the Cruiserweight title against Tony Nese. Tony Nese beat Cedric Alexander in the finals of the Cruiserweight tournament on 205 Live on Tuesday. They had a really good 20-minute match. I watched it. I don't watch 205 Live every week, but I did watch that match. Nese kicked out from a lumbar check, knocked out Cedric with a knee to the side of the head. After the match, Buddy Murphy came out to celebrate. He and Nese have been connected as partners, as friends now for a while, and he came out seemingly to celebrate with his friend, and unfortunately he turned on him, and I guess Tony Nese now is a babyface. I think it's time for Cedric Alexander to make the move up to Raw or SmackDown. I would include him in that shakeup that's coming up after WrestleMania. He's done all he can do. He's a great talent. And I think that he would... I guess it depends on how the rosters settle. I think he could... He could do well if he's given the chance to do so. And honestly, if failing that, I wouldn't even mind seeing him on the NXT roster. But as far as 205 Live, I think he's just... He's got to move on. He's just dying a death at this point on that roster. We have the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which Braun Strowman will now be in. A Battle Royal so prestigious that the past three winners have been Baron Corbin, who still dresses like he runs his own Applebee's franchise, even though he hasn't been Raw GM for 3 months now. Mojo Rawley, who talks to himself in the mirror on those weeks when they actually remember to put him on television. And Matt Hardy, who up until recently talked to a drone and believed himself to be thousands of years old. And I say that as somebody who loved the Broken Matt gimmick, but let's not kid ourselves into thinking that this Battle Royal is anything that we should be taking seriously. It's something for Strowman to do, and probably a match that the two SNL goofs end up in. Like Drew Carey that year in the Royal Rumble. I'm sure Andre would be proud. That's 13 matches that I just ran down. That doesn't include a possible Intercontinental title match with Bobby Lashley defending against the Demon, which has been rumored. Or the Usos defending their SmackDown tag team titles. You'll notice, aside from the women, I didn't mention either of the men's tag team champions. So if the Usos do defend their titles, and if Lashley defends the IC title, that brings us to 15. I'm assuming there won't even be a Raw tag team title match this year. I'm not sure why there would be. The Revival didn't even wrestle on Raw. They wrestled on Main Event this week. They teamed with the Ascension, and they lost to Titus O'Neil and the Lucha House Party. They are your Raw tag team champions. They're better off just keeping them off the show if that's the case. You know, I look at this card, and that's a lot of matches that I just outlined. So we're looking at 15, 16 matches right now. There's a few I'm looking forward to. Orton and Styles being one of them. Kofi challenging for the title. I expect the Raw women's title match, despite all the twists and turns, to end up being pretty good. Joe and Rey, that should be good. But you look at that card, and it's just exhausting. I actually pity whoever goes on last. If it is the women, good luck to them. They're going to need it. Hey, Mania Crawl is coming back. Mania Crawl 6 takes place WrestleMania Sunday, April 7th, starting at 12 noon. It is free to attend by the fans for the fans. They will help raise money for Connor's cure. It's all going down in Hoboken, New Jersey, just a 15-minute ride to MetLife Stadium. Anybody can just show up, although it may be 21 and over, given that it's a bar crawl and all. They're offering a VIP package, includes a Mania Crawl shirt, koozie, bus transportation to MetLife Stadium for WrestleMania. Buy your Mania Crawl gear at maniacrawl.com and follow at Mania Crawl on Twitter and Instagram for all of the latest updates.
Let me remind you, and I think a lot of people here will agree, NXT is way better than the WWE.
NXT, I already talked about the tapings, but it aired this week. Papa H came to the ring with the NXT title. He announced that due to Tommaso Ciampa's neck surgery, there would be a fatal five-way with Aleister Black, Ricochet, Adam Cole, The Velveteen Dream, and Matt Riddle to determine Johnny Gargano's opponent at TakeOver New York to crown a new NXT champion. This was a one-match show, so we had a lot of filler in the middle, lots of backstage interviews. We had footage of Ciampa's surgery and him with his family, his wife and kid. The doctor mentioned him having three major surgeries and how tough he is of a person to come back from all that. I wasn't sure what the first one was. I know he had the ACL tear, now the neck. I assume, though, in looking back, he was referring to Ciampa's other ACL tear that he suffered. That was back when he was still in Ring of Honor. So two ACL tears and now a neck fusion. He's 33 years old. If he had those kinds of injuries and he was closing in on 40, I would say at this point that could be it for him, career-wise. But he's 33. He's still a relatively young guy. Hopefully he's able to come back from this stronger and he can stay healthy. Because another big surgery like this, and I don't know how likely they would be on the main roster anyway, to push him above a certain level if they feel his body may break down. It could be a career killer if he gets hurt again. That's the problem when you have so many surgeries like this. So I really hope this one it takes and that he's able to stay healthy for the sake of his career. Because that's my biggest, for him, that's my biggest fear for him going forward. You know, it's not going to be looked at kindly if he keeps getting hurt like this. And why would they take somebody like that and put them in a position of any kind of prominence on Raw or SmackDown? You know, maybe, you know, they can relegate him to NXT for the rest of his career. I don't want to see that happen. I want to see him become an even bigger star. So hopefully everything works out for him. Mauro Ranallo did say that they had other things planned for this week. The Keith Lee-Donovan Dijak match, for example, though he didn't mention that. But that was originally scheduled for this past week. Apparently Keith Lee is out with some kind of an injury, an undisclosed injury. I don't know how serious it is or isn't. He wrestled last on March 8th. He has not had a match since, and I have not read or heard anything as far as what the injury is, if it's just something he can take a few weeks off and heal up, if it's something that might require surgery, I have no idea. So it looks like we're not getting that rematch for a while. That sucks. But this Fatal 4-Way here on this show was, it was a total sprint. It reminded me a lot of the Halftime Heat match. A lot of the same faces, balls to the wall, nonstop action. Never slowed down enough for you to take a breath. Everybody looked great here. Matt Riddle looked like he belonged. He didn't look out of place. I know a lot of people have been giving me shit. They don't, what do you see in this guy? I don't see what the big deal is. Why do you talk him up so much? he had his best performance, I think, here on this show since coming to NXT. And I think the more people get to see him, because he had a lot of great matches on the independents. And if you look at him, not everybody, I guess, is into the whole, you know, it's almost like a stoner demeanor where he's just very laid back, very chilled, always a smile on his face. That probably pisses some people off. But he actually is a very charismatic guy. And I've seen him have some kick-ass matches. And this is the first really great one I've seen him be part of since coming to WWE. So I would just ask people to just, you know, give it a chance. You know, let things play out. I would not have had any issue with them putting the championship on him, strapping the rocket and letting him launch. But if they're going to take their time with him, then that's fine too. I think in due time, people will, I think, warm to him as being one of the top guys on the brand, because I think he could be in that position. So I thought here he looked great in this match. I think more people, as they watch him, will realize how good he really is. I'm bummed he didn't win, but they wanted the traditional heel versus face match at TakeOver, you know. And although in Brooklyn, I have to say, I doubt that Adam Cole walks in as a heel in front of that crowd. He may get more cheers than Gargano does, so that's going to be something to watch for. We got to see Aleister Black and Velveteen Dream mix it up a little bit here. They won Rivalry of the Year 2 years ago in the NXT Awards, as Mauro pointed out on commentary. It came down to Matt Riddle and Velveteen Dream in the ring. They're going to meet for the North American title at TakeOver. Riddle put him in the bro mission. Cole pulled the referee out of the ring. Black mask to Riddle. Dream hit the Dream Valley Driver on Aleister Black. Went up top for the Purple Rainmaker. Elbow ricochet caught him. Hit a Hurricanrana. Off the top went Velveteen Dream. Wiped out an entire pile of men on the outside. Ricochet jumped up top. He hit the Shooting Star Press halfway across the ring on Matt Riddle, landed it perfectly, and as soon as he landed it and he got up to his knees, Adam Cole was right there. He caught him with the last shot, knee right to the back of the head, and he pinned Ricochet. Hell of a match. This was a hell of a match. It was a sprint. That's a perfect word for it, you know, that I used before. Just all action, great stuff. You know, one fall to a finish when these matches are like that. Everybody's scrambling. Everybody wants to be the number one contender. They want to be the champion. So, you know, it should have sort of a frenetic, nonstop energy to it, where it should never slow down and be constant pinfall attempts, because all it takes is one pinfall, you know, to win the whole thing. So I thought this was great. Adam Cole is going to the main event of TakeOver. Will they change plans and put the title on Adam Cole? I say change plans because I am sure that the plan was for Johnny Gargano to finally exercise his demons and beat Tommaso Ciampa and become NXT champion. Do they stay the course and give Gargano his big moment, or do they put the title on Cole and have him and the Undisputed Era sort of rule the roost for a while? You know, that's a good question for all of you. What do you prefer? I have mixed emotions about this. I think it's well past time to get the Undisputed Era on Raw or SmackDown, but I fear for their future. This is the conundrum when it comes to talking about NXT call-ups, right? Because you want them to go on to bigger and better opportunities. You want them to be in a WrestleMania match one day and all that. That can't happen if they stay in NXT. And the longer you stay in NXT, the more boring it gets. I mean, Finn Balor, Sami Zayn was in NXT for 3 years. He had done all he could do. It is an inherently smaller roster, although they're constantly bringing in new faces. But you, in a perfect world, want these guys to move up and have great success. I don't have faith when it comes to the NXT call-ups. And they've treated Aleister Black and Ricochet very well so far. Although it's still early. But a lot of people, they haven't. They haven't treated them well. Guys come in and it's kind of like they're a big fish in a small pond at NXT. And then they come up to the main roster and they still should be a big fish. But they treat them like a small fish in a big pond, and they don't gain traction. In that case, when I think of things in terms of the Undisputed Era, maybe NXT really is the best place for them to stay right now. In that case, I'd put the title on Adam Cole. You know, with Tommaso Ciampa out, and you have to think Ricochet and Black are going to be coming up to the roster full-time after WrestleMania, maybe now is not the best time to be calling up those four guys. Plus, the latest rumor is that they're thinking about putting Marina Shafir with them. splitting her apart from Jessamine Duke, having Duke go solo, and putting Shafir with Undisputed Era. Of course, she's married to one of the members. She's married to Roderick Strong. You know, they can maybe make like a nice little heel power couple in the group. I think that could work. So right now, if it were me, I'd put the title on Adam Cole. But to do so would then deprive Johnny Gargano of this big crowning moment that they've been building up seemingly for the last 2 years now. It's time to dip into the mailbag. Some of your questions, you could email them to me if you have questions of your own. TheSolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Tony, in Bethesda, Maryland, did you see the recent interview where Sting says the one person he would come out of retirement to wrestle is The Undertaker? Do you think he should? No, I don't. Sting did give an interview saying Undertaker is the only man he would come out of retirement to face. He said when he first came to WWE, Undertaker was already booked with Brock. And then later he did the deal with Triple H. And at that time, Undertaker was already booked with another guy. Of course, that being Bray Wyatt. He says he would come out of retirement to face The Undertaker. He says this as if he has any say in the matter. WWE will not clear him. He never had surgery to fix his neck issue. And even if he did, they're not going to clear him. Ever. It's not his choice. Unless Undertaker wants to leave and go work an independent match against Sting, it's not, maybe Conrad could set something up at StarCast. They'll put a ring in there. We'll have Undertaker after his panel. He'll go and he'll have a match with Sting. Okay, failing that, it ain't happening. You know, they had, the frustrating thing about it is this. And I know not everybody was on board with wanting a Sting-Undertaker match. They thought it would be the shits. Even then, they thought they're too old, it's going to suck, it's going to be all smoke and mirrors, and the entrance is going to be the best part. And maybe so. Maybe the entrances would have been the best part, and the build-up would have been the best part. But there was a time and a place to do it. And the time to do it is when Sting first came in. And they didn't. They didn't capitalize on it, and they missed the boat. That was the match that people wanted to see. And if Sting wanted to lose to Triple H, as he later claimed when that little WWE 24 documentary deal came out, he said, well, I wanted to lose to Triple H because I thought that this could be my final match. And if so, I want to go over, or rather I want to put over my opponent. If that was the case, it would have made even more sense for it to be against The Undertaker. I mean, hell, I pitched the double retirement match at the time with the idea that either man could win because if you knew going in, if they already told you going in, both Undertaker and Sting are wrestling their final match. This is it. One guy has to win, and one guy has to lose. I think that's a hell of a way to build that match. And, I mean, I still can't see WWE putting the WCW guy over their homegrown guy, but there would at least be some question, I think, from some people about, hey, who's going to win? Could go either way, right? Because I can't see The Undertaker losing in his last match, but then again, this is Sting's one and only WWE match. Surely they're not going to have him lose. And there's some legitimate debate about how that might have gone. So that, to me, was the best way and the best time to really promote that match. I think it could have worked. Now? Absolutely not. I have no interest in seeing that. Sting went out wrestling for the WWE title in his last match. I can think of worse ways to end your career. Just ask Kurt Angle. Ray from Blackpool, England. Walter dropped the OTT title to Jordan Devlin last weekend in Ireland. Do you think this means Pete Dunne's reign as the NXT UK champion is over? I thought Dunne's reign as champion was over the minute that Walter debuted in NXT UK. I would be shocked if he doesn't win the championship at TakeOver. After that, I would include Dunne in this international shakeup that they're doing next month. I hope them calling it an international shakeup is a sign that people like Pete Dunne are going to be in it. Where he should go depends on what the rosters look like when it's over. But if we're going by the current rosters, the way they're set up, I would send him to SmackDown. Caleb, I had a question regarding the potential main event for WrestleMania 36. I read in an interview with Roman Reigns that he's hoping next year's main event will be himself and Seth Rollins for the Universal Championship. If that match were to happen, do you think Reigns could turn heel? I think it's fairly obvious that Rollins would be the one to turn, as it is familiar territory to him, but could I be wrong? Who says anybody has to turn? I mean, it's a year away. So who knows what the story for it might be. But you ask me the question now. I have no interest in seeing Roman Reigns against Seth Rollins headlining WrestleMania next year. It's like, enough. Can we get some other people in that spot, please? We might this year. That's great. Let's get some more new faces in there next year. Enough already. Again, with some combination of Rollins or Reigns. And enough. We can do better. All the talent they have, I hope they can do better than that for next year's main event. So, to answer your question, of the two, it won't be Roman Reigns going heel. So you can figure out who the heel would be then if either of them had to go heel. It's pretty obvious to me. Dan in Washington, D.C. Since SummerSlam is in Toronto this year, what would you think about them doing a special all-Canadian class for the WWE Hall of Fame? They could induct the Hart Foundation, Christian, Rick Martel, the Rougeaus, and Luna Vachon. I'm not sure what SummerSlam being in Toronto has to do with the Hall of Fame next year. I mean, WrestleMania is in Tampa next year. Unless you're suggesting they do a second Hall of Fame class as part of SummerSlam weekend. I mean, then they'll really burn through a lot of the names they have left. I don't think that's a wise move. I wouldn't do that. But as far as the names you mentioned, I mean, Hart Foundation, they do belong in there. They might go in this year. That was the rumor. That they would go in, Bret, Anvil, and Jimmy Hart. Not the faction, the Hart Foundation, but the tag team. Although everybody in that faction belongs in the Hall of Fame. But yes, the Hart Foundation should get the nod. Rick Martel, he should already be in. I don't know. I'm not sure why he's not. I would put him in, sure. I'd put the Rougeaus in as a team, the Rougeau brothers, not the Quebecers. PCO is in Ring of Honor now anyway. But Ray Rougeau still works for WWE as an announcer. So it wouldn't be too tough to put them in together. And the Rougeau brothers' theme music deserves its own Hall of Fame induction. So, yeah, I have no problem with them going in. Luna was born here in the States, but I know she was adopted into the Vachon family. And they were up in Montreal, so she's a Canuck. So that's the Canadian connection there. And absolutely, Luna Vachon should be in the Hall of Fame. I'll give you one more. Here's another Canadian name I'd throw out there. Earthquake. John Tenta. He actually, when he came into WWE, he came in initially as the Canadian Earthquake. And then they just shortened it to Earthquake. Kind of like Kane the Undertaker. Became just the Undertaker. But, you know, here's a guy, he headlined with Hogan. He was a tag team champion, was on a bunch of WrestleManias. He, outside of WWE, I mean, obviously he had a run in WCW as well, as Shark and all those ridiculous gimmicks from the Dungeon of Doom, but before he ever came to WWE, he had a successful run for a few years in All Japan Pro Wrestling. You know, he was a legit tough guy, real sumo. Yokozuna was an imposter sumo. Tenta was the real deal. He even won the sumo match on Raw once against Yokozuna when they took the ropes down. And I felt terrible when I found out that he passed away. He had bladder cancer. He was only in his like early 40s, mid-40s maybe. He had bladder cancer. Treatment didn't work. I remember they tried chemo or radiation. It just didn't work at all. And the tumor spread. And before he died, he had joined the old community over at WrestleCrap. WrestleCrap.com used to, I don't know if they still do, had a message board community. And he had done an interview with what's the guy's name over at WrestleCrap? R.D. Reynolds. And I remember listening to the interview that Tenta did with R.D., and he just, you know, very self-deprecating sense of humor, didn't take himself too seriously, just seemed like a really nice guy. And he was able to poke fun at a lot of the silly stuff that he did. And I know the two of them became pretty good friends. And on the message board, they set up a section just for him. You know, he was sick at the time, but he could check the messages. He would interact occasionally with people in there when he was feeling up to it. And just, you know, when I heard that he died, it just hit a lot of people really hard. So anyway, if you're doing a Canadian class, I think you should absolutely consider putting him in there as well. But I just don't think it's something that you need to do as part of SummerSlam weekend. I think the Hall of Fame should be a once-a-year type deal. And every name that I just mentioned, whether it's an all-Canadian class or not, they should be in there. Ashton in Houston, Texas. What are your thoughts on Alberto Del Rio claiming he's patched things up with Triple H and WWE and that the door is open for him to return? Do you think this is likely after all of the drama with Paige? Paige has nothing to do with it. That's between him and her. He didn't come off very well in that whole thing, but neither did she. You know, look, they could just keep them on separate rosters. I assume that they're grown adults, and so whether they're on the same roster or not, they'll just make it work. The bigger point is they don't need him. They don't need him. He says, oh, he's apologized to Triple H. They shook hands, all the things I said about him, calling him Big Nose, and, you know, all you remember those drunken rants where he was going off on Triple H and the company. Because he was never a Triple H guy. He was always, Del Rio was always one of Vince's guys. Vince is the one who's always liked to bring him back. He thinks he's a real tough guy. He's a throwback and just likes him. And so that's why he came back the last time. And that didn't end well. I don't see the need for it. If I'm WWE anyway, I don't see the need. I really don't. He says now everything's cool with them. Great. Good for him. You know, but to clarify, in this interview that he didn't say that he was, you know, itching to come back to WWE. He said he's not begging to come back and the company is not asking him to come back. He only said that before he retires, the door is open for him to come back and wrestle some matches. That is different than him coming back for another run. He can go screw on that. I have no interest in another Alberto Del Rio run. Yeah, he calls himself the Pride of Mexico, right? Isn't that what he calls himself? Is that his Twitter handle? The Pride of Mexico? WWE already has the Pride of Mexico. His name is Andrade Cien Almas, and he's not even 30 years old. And they're not doing much with him. Focus on the newer guys that you have. Focus on the guys in NXT. Focus on people like him. Don't worry about bringing in Alberto Del Rio. You don't need him. Jerome from Sin City, USA. Had the original plan of Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair happened at WrestleMania 8, would the Ultimate Warrior still have returned that night? That is an interesting question. Hogan against Flair was never the original plan. In storyline, it was. Hogan got picked at the press conference as Flair's WrestleMania opponent. They did announce the match on TV, but it was always going to be Sid against Hogan. Now, had they done Hogan against Flair, had their house show run did better business and they started, you know, months in advance thinking along the lines of, hey, we're going to do Hogan Flair at WrestleMania. It's a very good question. You know, they didn't have pay-per-views every month back then like they do now. In fact, the next pay-per-view after WrestleMania was SummerSlam. And so would they have waited that long to bring the Warrior back? Because I don't know that after being gone for a while, the Warrior would have just reemerged on an episode of Superstars. They didn't even have Monday Night Raw yet. So when would he have come back if not at WrestleMania? You know, would they have waited until SummerSlam? I don't know. You know, or would they have brought him back before WrestleMania so that he could be on the WrestleMania card and have a match, and maybe they would have feuded him with somebody like The Undertaker. Keep Undertaker heel, have Jake the Snake wrestle Macho Man to blow off their feud the right way. Do Warrior against Undertaker, but then Sid is the odd man out. It was actually going to be Sid against The Undertaker. So there would have been no obvious place for the Warrior. The Warrior would have been the odd man out in that situation. I guess Papa Shango. I just don't know. It's a great question. WrestleMania 8 is one of the biggest what-if WrestleManias of all time, with all of the potential matches and scenarios that could have played out but didn't. Like, the ideal card, if you made your fantasy WrestleMania 8 card, and I'm pretty sure I've talked about this before, but I never miss a chance to talk about WrestleMania 8 because it's one of my favorite shows. Even though we missed out on, like, some really, really big matches, I still look at WrestleMania 8 and it's still one of my favorite shows. But you look at the card that might have been. We could have had Hogan against Flair, Savage and Jake, Loser Leaves Town, since Jake had decided to leave the company. Maybe Warrior Sid or Warrior Undertaker, Undertaker Sid, some combination of that. Bret Hart and Roddy Piper I would have kept exactly the same for the IC title. And underneath, Shawn Michaels against Marty Jannetty. Had Jannetty not gone and gotten himself fired after the barbershop window deal, that was building to a match between them that we never got until the following year. You know, LOD, Legion of Doom. Look at them. They dropped the tag team titles at a non-televised live event 6 weeks or so before WrestleMania that supposedly wasn't even recorded. Or at least that's the story. That's the the urban legend that's never been proven, it's never been debunked. Hawk did not want the match recorded, and so it wasn't recorded. But in any event, they dropped the belts, and then depending on who you believe, they either left the company briefly on their own before they came back, or Hawk was suspended for whatever reason, and he was not allowed to wrestle at WrestleMania because his suspension would not end until after the show. Whatever it was, they were relegated to doing a promo at WrestleMania that year. That whole card is a what might have been, and it's still one of my favorite WrestleManias. Tom from Liverpool, England, on last week's podcast, you mentioned that you would be seeing Jordan Peele's new movie, Us. So buy or sell on the scarier film of his, Get Out or Us. I did see Us on Friday. I will not give anything away because I think it's a movie you should be going into knowing as little as possible. I did enjoy it. The soundtrack for the movie is kick-ass also. Of the two films, I would say Us is scarier, so buy on that one. But I thought Get Out was the better movie of the two. I enjoyed Get Out more. So, but two movies in, these are his only two directing credits so far. And already this guy has won me over. I'm a Jordan Peele fan. You know, the next horror film he does, I'll be there in the theater to see it. Before the movie, they showed the trailer. They showed about 10 different trailers. The movie was supposed to start at 8 o'clock. Of course, anybody who goes to the... I don't go to the movies as much, so I kind of forget sometimes that if it's an 8 o'clock movie, it ain't starting until like 8:40 by the time all the trailers are done. So there were a whole bunch of trailers, but I saw the trailer for the new Pet Sematary movie. I never saw the original Pet Sematary or read the book. I think it was adapted from a Stephen King book. Never read it, never saw it. I heard they sort of changed the narrative on it a little bit, which people were uneasy about. But now that they've seen it, I've seen this movie apparently getting great reviews. And that comes out, I think, in a couple of weeks. They had a trailer for this other movie, another horror movie called Ma, with Octavia Spencer as this psychotic woman who basically terrorizes a bunch of white privileged teenagers. I will probably be there to see that as well, because that looks kind of fun. And they're rebooting Child's Play. They didn't show the trailer for it. I've already seen that on YouTube. But yeah, I didn't even realize they're rebooting Child's Play. What is wrong with the original? Did the original really need a reboot? I'll probably see it anyway. I'm part of the problem, I readily admit. They reboot these movies that don't need the reboot treatment, and people like me pay to see them, so they make more. If nobody paid to see it, they wouldn't make them.
What did we just see? What did we just see? It's WrestleMania, baby!
Top 10 most shocking WrestleMania match outcomes. We are into the top three. There have been some exciting Money in the Bank cash-ins over the years. Two of them came in 2013 alone. Dolph Ziggler, the night after WrestleMania 29, right? Easily one of the best ones. And Randy Orton at SummerSlam that year. That was part of the whole swerve on Daniel Bryan after he beat John Cena. That was well done. Those two and all of the others had one thing in common. They all took place on non-WrestleMania shows. Pay-per-views, Raws, SmackDown, but never WrestleMania. At least two men had promised to wait until WrestleMania to cash in. They gave advance warning of their intentions to do so, those being Mr. Kennedy and Daniel Bryan. Kennedy was going to do the Kennedy countdown, but then he got hurt, and so they quickly took the briefcase off of him. He dropped it to Edge. Only it turned out that he wasn't hurt nearly as badly as they had originally thought, so he really didn't have to surrender his briefcase, so sucks to be him. With Bryan, the original plan was for him to cash in at WrestleMania 28, but as I mentioned last week, instead he lost the title on that show in 18 seconds to Sheamus. Enter Seth Rollins. Number three in the countdown is Seth Rollins cashing in his Money in the Bank contract to win the WWE title at WrestleMania 31. A lot can change in a year. At the end of the Royal Rumble match in 2014, the people badly wanted to see Roman Reigns eliminate Batista to win. And they booed when Roman got dumped out. Then the Shield feuded with the Wyatt family. That was just pro wrestling magic. Their first match at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view is one of my favorite WWE matches of the last decade. And the fans were totally into the Shield. Even after the Shield split, they still seemed to dig Roman. Then he went out with a hernia injury. Even after he came back from the hernia, initially, they still cheered for him. But someone else came back from injury around the same time. Daniel Bryan. And he entered himself into the 2015 Royal Rumble match. Well, so did Roman Reigns. And when it became obvious they were grooming Roman for that spot to win the Rumble and go on and wrestle for the championship that Daniel Bryan never really lost, that's where the tide began to turn. You can trace all of the hate back to that period before the Royal Rumble in 2015. Bryan was still very over with the fans. They wanted badly for him to win that Royal Rumble match, especially after not even being in it the year before. And then he entered, and after only a few minutes, he was gone. And that was it. That was the beginning of the end for Roman Reigns and any hope of the fans accepting him on a wide scale. It was the dumbest move they could have possibly made. If they wanted Roman to win, entering Daniel Bryan into the Royal Rumble match was the single worst decision they could have made. All they had to do was delay his return until the night after the Royal Rumble. That's all they had to do. You know, and even that might not have worked, because you might have had people thinking, well, Daniel Bryan's going to be a surprise, and when he wasn't a surprise, they might have booed anyway and been pissed off, but you would have had a fighting chance. Right? The end result may have been the same. They wanted Bryan badly enough, nobody else was going to work in that position. That's just the way it is. But to this day, my mind is still boggled by that decision. To bring him back when they didn't have to. That was their own choice. And when you see what they did with him in the Royal Rumble match, it's like, why? There was no reason. There was no plan. He was in and out. There was no reason for him to... They sabotaged Roman Reigns through no fault of his own. And the reasoning, allegedly, for them eliminating Daniel Bryan as early as they did from the match that year was so that the fans would just get it out of their system in time for Roman Reigns when he came out to win the match. By then they would have gotten all the booing, all the boo birds would have gotten it out of their system. Only they didn't get it out of their system. And really, until he went out with the leukemia diagnosis last year, all these years later, they still hadn't gotten it out of their system. They made a dumb move and they paid the price for it. So now going into WrestleMania, here, WrestleMania 31, the fans were shitting all over Roman Reigns. Not exactly the reaction they were going for. It didn't help that on the go-home episode of Raw, they had Reigns and Lesnar do a tug-of-war over the title belt. That was the closing scene from Monday Night Raw. Like Roman Reigns is trying to pull the purse away from a purse snatcher. They're fighting over this championship. Two kids on the playground fighting over a ball. And Lesnar, for all the talk of his deal expiring at WrestleMania, which is why a lot of people figure, well, surely he's losing... He went on ESPN a few days before the pay-per-view to announce that he just signed a brand new contract. He was thinking about going to UFC. He decided, you know what? I'm a sports entertainer now. And he signed a nice, big, fat new deal with WWE. He's going to stick around. That probably gave a lot of people hope that he might actually retain at WrestleMania. Now, the year before, Seth Rollins, he turned on the Shield. He joined the Authority. They helped him win the Money in the Bank briefcase. Kane did. Before he feuded with Dean Ambrose for much of the rest of 2014. And then, he was part of one of the greatest matches in Royal Rumble history. Pinned by an F5 from Brock Lesnar, triple threat match with John Cena. You will not find very many matches in WWE better than that one. So while Rollins was occupied at WrestleMania that year with Randy Orton, who had just left the Authority... I don't remember too many people being preoccupied with this idea that Seth Rollins is definitely going to cash in at WrestleMania. What I do remember are some people believing that Paul Heyman might turn on Brock Lesnar and align with Roman Reigns as the new champion and his newest client. This was, of course, more so before Brock signed the new contract to stick around. They thought, well, Brock's leaving. They're going to have Heyman turn on him. He'll go with Roman. Especially after that gushing interview that Heyman gave. Remember that night after the Royal Rumble? They got snowed in. And so the entire episode of Raw was basically interviews from Titan Tower. And Paul Heyman is just lavishing all of this praise on Roman Reigns and talking about, I knew your father and your grandfather or your uncle or whatever, and this great Samoan bloodline. And some people took that to be some foreshadowing, maybe, of another Heyman turn on Lesnar. And I heard more about that than I did the idea of a Rollins cash-in. Before everybody starts coming at me saying, it wasn't a surprise. Really? Because I didn't hear too many people talking about that. And I think the reason is because most people thought this was going to be the coronation for Roman Reigns. He was Vince's chosen one. Blue contact lenses and all. This was still the phase where Vince had him wearing these blue contact lenses that made him look like some kind of cyborg. He was the guy. He was Vince's handpicked guy. Winner of the Royal Rumble against the wishes of the fans. They had Brock Lesnar end The Undertaker's undefeated streak for this so that Roman could slay the beast and become the man. His family sure believed it. Roman's family, his father, Sika, of the Wild Samoans, he was there ringside for the match. He thought his son was winning, and when he didn't, he apparently flipped the fuck out over it. He was so upset, the Observer at the time said he was looking to start a war. He worked himself into a shoot, brother. Rollins himself, he's talked about the cash-in. He says he didn't even know about it until the middle of the show that night. He lost to Randy Orton earlier off that great curb stomp attempt into an RKO finish. When The Rock was out there later on, he had a segment with Stephanie and Triple H. Ronda Rousey was there. While that segment was going on, they came and they got Rollins. They pulled him into a room with Heyman and Lesnar, and they worked out a new finish to the main event. I take it the original finish was going to be Roman winning, which is what the family had expected, but then Vince changed his mind. I knew the title was changing hands before the match even started. As soon as they promoted that the champion was going to fly out to the East Coast to appear on the Today Show the next morning, I knew. Now, I didn't know it was going to be Seth Rollins. I figured it was going to be Roman Reigns. But there was not a chance in hell that Brock Lesnar was catching a red-eye flight to the East Coast to be up at 4 in the morning yucking it up with Matt Lauer and Al Roker. Not a chance. And then immediately flying back to the West Coast to be on Monday Night Raw, which was in San Jose the next night. That's what they had Seth Rollins do. Rollins had to get on a red eye from California to New York to be on the Today Show and then fly right back to California for Raw that night. That was a dead giveaway to me that Brock Lesnar was not retaining the championship. The match itself, I thought, was excellent. This is the second Brock Lesnar-Roman Reigns match featured in this countdown here. And the first one sucked, I thought. I just, you know, and it wasn't radically different from the WrestleMania 31 match. So they are very similar matches. But I hated the second one. I love the first one. Part of that is the fact the crowd just didn't completely shit all over this one like they did that one. But part of it also is that this was their first meeting. This was not the rematch. This was not the rematch of the rematch. It was the first meeting. And Lesnar dominated much of it. Reigns, he fought from underneath. He took a lot of abuse. He was the underdog. And when they did it again at WrestleMania 34, we had already seen this song and dance play out before. And nobody likes a sequel that basically just copies the original but isn't as good. Reigns, he bled a gusher in the WrestleMania 34 match, couldn't save the match. Lesnar bled in this one. He went headfirst into the ring post, immediately started bleeding. This was also the first time that Lesnar ever blurted out Suplex City, bitch, thus making himself millions of dollars in merch money. So, it's the end of the match. Both men are down. Rollins' music hits. He sprints down to the ring to cash in. Not only the very first Money in the Bank cash in at WrestleMania history, but the first time anybody in the history of Money in the Bank going all the way back to 2005, 10 years earlier. The first time anybody had ever cashed in mid-match, which goes against all conventional wisdom, right? Why would you cash in during a match when you can just wait until the match is over and the champion is exhausted and it's one-on-one? So now it's a triple threat match. The people in my section in the stadium were losing their shit over this. People loved this finish. Rollins hit Lesnar with a curb stomp, doesn't go for the cover. He's gonna give him one more. He goes to hit it again. Lesnar scoops him up for an F5. Roman comes from out of nowhere, hits a spear on Brock. Rollins falls to his feet, hits a curb stomp on Roman. Curb stomps the shit out of him and wins the title. you can hear Seth Rollins say thank you so much to Roman Reigns right before the referee counts three. He was so happy. And Rollins makes history. New WWE champion. Even if you didn't think that Rollins cashing in was much of a surprise or a shocking outcome, and a lot of people would disagree with you, I think the real surprise was him cashing in the middle of the match like that. Between that and the fact that Vince didn't plant the crown on the head of the crown prince, I consider this to be a shocking outcome. This was one of the best WrestleMania shows of the last 10 years. This and WrestleMania 30 back to back. And then we had WrestleMania 32. It's like having 2 weeks of nice weather back to back. You just know that you're in for a shitty week with rain and snow and slop and shit. That's what WrestleMania 32 was. Slop and shit. Next night on Raw, we came as close as we've come since Brock came back in 2012. Or any time since. In getting a Brock Lesnar match on Monday Night Raw. He comes out, cuts all over his face, dressed in his gear, ready to go, ready for his rematch with Seth Rollins. And they teased it. They brought him out. They did the ring introductions and everything. But then Rollins bailed out of the ring and said, I'm not feeling it tonight. Brock chased after him. He caught Rollins in the ring, gave him a German. He landed on his feet. He hit Brock with a kick to the side of the head that just, he flicked him off, basically, just briefly stunned him. All that did was piss him off even more. Rollins bailed through the crowd. Lesnar laid waste to J&J security. He killed the announcers, flipped the announce desk on top of them. Michael Cole tried to weasel away. Brock grabbed him, gave him an F5. One of his shoes goes flying through the air. Then he beat up a planted cameraman. Stephanie McMahon comes out, sends Brock home on his next long vacation, disguised as a suspension. Rollins and Lesnar did have a match at the Battleground pay-per-view later that summer. Brock totally dominated the match to the tune of 13 German suplexes. But then The Undertaker came out and kicked Brock in the dick. So Rollins got to keep his belt. And here we are, 4 years later. And after that cash-in, and again, Rollins will have the chance to take the title away from Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. This time there is no money in the bank. There will be no cash-in. Braun Strowman already blew his cash-in. Now he's in the Battle Royal shooting an angle with the Dingbats from SNL. My interest level in this Rollins-Lesnar match coming up is virtually non-existent. Which probably bodes well for how I'll view it coming out of WrestleMania since my expectations are so low. And I don't know why they're so low. This is a match that has a story that dates back 4 years. But I don't know, just the way I feel right now. You tell me, am I wrong? How many of you are genuinely excited about this match? Is this the match you're most looking forward to going into WrestleMania? Because it's not for me. It just, among everything going on and the stuff with Kofi and the women and everything else, it just does not feel like a priority right now. But here we are 4 years later and we're back at it again with Rollins and Lesnar. You can find all of these segments, by the way, each time they go up on Wednesdays on the YouTube channel. I have them archived in a single playlist. So all of these countdowns that I do, including the retro ones that go up on the channel, like the WCW Top 15, I'm organizing them in a playlist. So when they're all up, you can go back at any time and run through the entire list in order. Pick out the clip you want to listen to. So that's on the YouTube channel. We are rapidly approaching 48,000, soon to be 50,000 subs. Please sub on the YouTube channel if you're not already a subscriber on there. You can follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster is my handle on social media. Instagram is TheSolomonster. I should do more on Instagram, I know. So that's the place to find me. That does it for episode 591 this week. I also want to send a shout out before I forget to Mish, to John Draper, and to Julian Cannon. I saw that I was a little bit out of the loop the last few days, so I didn't comment on it, but they did their own panel at the, I think it was the C2E2 Expo or convention in Chicago. Very cool. I know there's video of it up on YouTube. I haven't watched all of it yet, but very cool. I'm happy that went well, and those are good guys, so I just wanted to shout them out here. Today is, I didn't say anything about this earlier, but today is the 4-year anniversary of my father's death. I can remember when it happened. I was doing an episode, I think that weekend, only a few days later. I had to fly out to California for this show that I just got done talking about, WrestleMania 31. And I was a little on the fence. What do I do? You know, do I go? Do I stay? I was convinced by the other members of the crew to go. And it was a great decision. It was a great distraction from everything that was going on and the shitstorm that I knew was waiting for me when I got home. But that whole week, that whole weekend, was just a total whirlwind. So yeah, I still think about him. It's tough every year that goes by. It doesn't feel like it's been that long. It's been 4 years, you know, since he died. It's just very weird. And this week sucks in general because Tuesday is going to be 1 year since my mother passed away. And this is only a few weeks after my cat died. So the month of March pretty much fucking sucks for me and will forever suck. And it is what it is. You know, what else is there to say? It's going to be a year. I remember what I was doing a year ago, me and my brother, all the stuff we were dealing with. A year ago at this time, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. It was one of the darkest periods, I think, of either one of our lives, having to go through it. When it was over, there was sadness, there was relief. There was a whole bunch of different emotions. So here we are a year later, and I miss them. I miss her every day. You know, what can I say? And hopefully I will be able to just keep doing what I'm doing and you know, doing them proud, and that's really the only thing I can ask for. But it doesn't get... Look, with her, it's only been a year. I heard from a lot of you about your own experiences losing parents and, you know, how it is a year later, 2 years, 5 years later. And the one thing that was pretty consistent that I heard from a lot of you who have lost, let's say, your mom before, is, you know, time is one of those things where as you get farther away from it, not that you don't think about it as much, but it doesn't sting as much, but it still hurts. And that's absolutely true. I can't say that I feel any better about the whole situation now than I did a year ago. You know, I do think about it often. And there's always going to be that hole in your heart. You can't fill that hole. That hole's always going to be there. So that's kind of how I feel about the whole thing. It's a rough week, as it always is this time of year. But thank you for all of the support that you've given me, especially back when it happened. I can't tell you how supportive all my listeners were, all the messages and everything. You guys rock. You guys, look, as much as my friends were very helpful in kind of getting me through all these things, you guys were every bit as helpful. The people I heard from and the comments and the support and everything was... I was very lucky to have that kind of support system that just anybody who doesn't do this sort of thing where they're interacting with hundreds of people, thousands of people every single week, they don't have that same platform. You know, they just have their Facebook friends and sending them words of encouragement and stuff. But when you have like an audience like this and they all sort of band together, that's really been very helpful for me. So I bring this up as much to say thank you as anything else. And that's the show. I will see you for episode 592 next weekend as we get ever closer to WrestleMania. I'm very much looking forward to seeing all of you. I didn't have a chance to promote it earlier since I was plugging everybody else's stuff, but we have our own meetup Friday, April 5th, starting at 2 p.m. That's the day of the NXT TakeOver show. We're going to be at the King's Beer Hall, the KBH. If you have been to any of our Brooklyn meetups before, it is the same place. It's only a few blocks away from the Barclays Center. 2 p.m. April 5th. I hope to see you all there. Please RSVP on Facebook if you have not already done so. I will see you guys next week. Until then, be well, stay safe. And have yourselves a great week, and I'll see you for 592. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay, that's racist.
Well, no, it's...
Racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, that those are the racists.
Solomonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.